Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
The following is a production of the Emerson News Network.
Already, we are just getting started. I can hear you. Yeah. I don't know if you're jumping now. This song is about. I don't know if I should say this tonight, because I know we got law officers here, and I'm packing a gun tonight. I'm packing my pistol. You know what I'm talking about, don't you, Pittsburgh? Talking about my six shooter of sex. Talking about my Uzi of ooze. You know what it all comes down to? I'm talking about my lip gun!
So here's a little something for you, new partner, Oregon.
Makes a man, is it the power in his hands? Is it his quest for glory? Give it all you got to fight to the top, so we can know your story. Now you're a man, a man, man, man. Now you're a man, a manny, manny, man, a man, man, man. You are now a man, you're a what makes a man? Is it the woman in his arms? Just 'cause she has big titties? Or is it the way he fights every day? No, it's probably the titties.
Why, hello, it is 29 minutes after the hour of 1, and this is the month of June in the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milkpacking district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of all good things and peoples. Greetings to you on this Friday. It is June 17th, 2011, and welcome to Day 12. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Brought to you today by Mr. and Mrs. Emerson. Thank you for joining us. It is 503-505-6964 if you would like to join us today. 503-505-6964. Or you can text if you like via the website and Skype, also running at Rick Emerson Show. That is our username, all one word, at Rick Emerson, at Skype. That is Rick Emerson Show, all one word, our username. Don Taylor can also be emailed. That's Don, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com and or showpony at rickemerson.com.
All right.
This guy says, Rick, I think the guy who sang that song kicked my ass every day in junior high. That's awesome. Fantastic. Wonderful assessment, sir. Well done. Hey, did you get that video? Did the guy CC you on that email? It was like the worst version of A Sweet Child of Mine that you've ever heard in your entire life?
I don't think so.
Oh, God, I got to show it to you. It's wonderful. I don't even know that it's actually so bad. It's actually so bad, I might not want to play it on the air. Which is not a thing that I say very often. I'll see if I can dig it up here in just a few. Guys sent it to me as a possible video rodeo segment. But, I mean, it's really astonishingly bad. I'll see if I can dig it up. It is 503-505-6964. It's 503-505-6964. Mr. Big Jim Willie going to be joining us here in the studio in just a bit with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 today, talking about Mr. Ed O'Neill as we head into Father's Day. Let's see, we got a clown watch coming up today, and Don Taylor tracking the following headlines for you on this Friday.
A man fends off robbers with a machete. Another man is bitten by a rattlesnake after he pokes it with a stick. And yet another man is attacked by an aggressive goat.
So it's a whole nature gone awry weekend.
It's just people defending themselves from just various things.
By the way, I'd like to thank the guy that sent me, and by thank I mean wish a life of hatred and cesspit and filth toward the guy that sent me this. It was a photo gallery of nothing but sharks leaping out of the ocean and grabbing things out of the air, which I had the misfortune of looking at right before I went to bed last night. And so then that was like that. Everything I dreamt that night just ended with something just leaping out of the blackness and snatching it away from me. So thanks whoever you are. It is 503-505-6964. So that's on the way today. We got those headlines, Mr. Big Jim Willig, Clown Watch, and another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. And I thought about putting together, like, I was going to do like a father's song top five thing, or, you know, top five songs. But there really aren't that many songs about dads. I mean, you know, mom has got like a million songs, but there's just like that goddamn Everclear song.
Yeah.
And then there's What's It, the Father Effort, and then that's it.
No, there's a lot of songs about bad dads, I think.
Are there?
I think there are country songs about bad dads.
There's like Your Boy Named Sue, but it's not really about a dad as such.
There's the cover of Daddy, Please Don't Get Drunk This Christmas, covered by the Decemberists.
I guess there's Daddy, Don't You Walk So Fast.
Yeah.
But see, but then we're just getting into not the top five. It's like the five that I managed to scrape up.
There's Cats in the Cradle, which is about fathers.
See, but I would argue that it's not really about dads as such.
It's more about sons.
You could say it's about sons, or it's about, you know, it's about the unyielding nature of time.
There's the awesome song from the Warner Brothers cartoon about father.
I have no idea what we're talking about.
I'll find that and then I'll play that later.
Which Warner Brothers cartoon?
I can't remember the name of it, but it's about Father's Day, and they're celebrating Father's Day. Or it's either Father's Day or it's his birthday. And it's the three bears, the mom bear with her hair in the curlers, and the huge big baby bear in the diaper.
Right, I know exactly the cartoon you're talking about. I have no recollection of there being a song about father.
Oh, they do a whole thing about
all right, well, now
I'll find it and play it.
And now it's a challenge. Now I'm going to put together five. Okay, so I'll find, and some of them may include the songs that we were just now discussing. Okay. So I'll see if I can dig up five songs by later on in the program. All right. How was your evening, Don Taylor? Now, wasn't last night your game night Patrick's game night?
Yeah, it was Patrick's game night. And so before he left on the way home from work, we stopped at because I needed some supplies because we're still sort of camping in our apartment. And there's this grocery store we've never, ever been to, ever, but we've driven by like a gazillion times on Barber, called Barber World Foods. And so the Safeway on Barber is horrible. It's a horrible, horrible nightmare place from hell.
I don't think that I know that there's a Fred Meyer on Barber, but I don't think I know where the Safeway is.
Well, the thing is, the Burlingame Fred Meyer on Barber currently is under construction.
Oh, is it? You can't shop there?
They raised it, and now they're turning it into what looks like it's going to be some ginormous theme park. Okay. It's just they're rebuilding this enormous Fred Meyer. And so you can't shop there. The Safeway was built in, like, I think 1963. And it's one of those old stores where they try and cram as much merchandise into the store as there are in all of the other Safeways. But the Safeway is about two-thirds the size.
It was the one on Hawthorne.
It's like a third the size of... Yes.
Yeah.
And so it's just a nightmare. It's just horrible. Horrible, horrible. So we needed some food. And so, okay, well, let's go to this Barber World Foods place. And it's awesome. It's just, it's this amazing place. I think I've heard Kelly Clark talk about this place. And now that, once I was inside, I realized that I think Kelly Clark has talked about it.
Is it like an Uwajamaya kind of a...
It's, kind of a Middle Eastern sort of a sense. It's owned by the same people who own Yahala Restaurant.
Oh, right, okay.
And then they have the little international market next door to Yahala. They also own this place, which is actually a full supermarket. So if you imagine, like... The way Patrick put it was that it's like New Seasons if New Seasons wasn't so yuppified.
Right.
And they have all the things that you... It's a little bit pricey because it's an independent grocery store, but they have all the things that you need from a regular grocery store. Plus, they have all the great, like, sort of weird international foods that they sell. Like, I use pomegranate molasses, which is actually a highly concentrated pomegranate syrup in one of the truffles I make. And I've been having to drive out to that place, either go to New Seasons or Whole Foods, or go to that place next to Yahala to find the pomegranate molasses. They have it there. They also have a big brick oven where they make pita bread. And it takes like 5 minutes to make pita. So you say, I'd like some pita bread. And they go, sure. And they throw a ball of dough in there and make you this great big thing of freshly baked pita bread and just hand it to you still warm. And you can walk around the store and you can like munch on it while you're shopping.
As somebody, you mentioned the name of the store and like 4 seconds later, someone typed, best store ever, 50 cent wood-fired oven pitas. So delicious.
Yeah.
So delicious.
And I'm looking at and they have the deli area with the pre-made food. And I saw what looked like just like really delicious pot roast, and I'm like a sucker for pot roast, and then immediately realized on the sign it was lamb. So I got this like amazing stewed lamb. I got like a half pound of that and brought it home. The food was terrific.
How can you be so sophisticated and so trashy all at once? No offense. Because, I mean, you know, you'll just sit there and just scoop out big handfuls of pub cheese and spill things on yourself. And then it's like you're talking about getting like extract of pomegranate distillate or something. And it's like I have no... See, I just operate on the one level where I'm just a hick. And then it's like you have this weird, you're like a culinary tuning fork where you just have these two parallel but distinct tracks in your life.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Is that, when is it, because I'm trying to figure out, here's the thing about you that I don't get. So I'm trying to figure out exactly where it is that you got this, the culinary bent from. Like when it is that you got onto the whole track in your life of learning about, you know, by the actual the creation of food and the combinations of food and learning about things that didn't come with like a cheese packet, you know, on the side.
I think, well, it comes from a couple of things. One is I really, really, I'm just one of those people, I've always really loved food. I was a chubby kid and loved food. And my mother was a terrible cook, a really, really terrible cook. And my father had really terrible, for the most part, really terrible Midwestern taste. He came from Nebraska, and it's like, I didn't know I liked pork chops, for example, until I was in my mid-20s, because I'd only ever had them cooked so much that they were just like shoe leather.
They were like hockey pucks.
Yeah. So, like, meat had to be cooked until it was completely dead. On the other hand, though, my mother and my grandmother would take me to restaurants, and I learned to enjoy my steak rare, and I would eat, like, shrimp and... You know, things. So I knew that there were two different ways to eat, but I think I was really frustrated by the fact I couldn't get those foods in my home because my mother was a horrible cook. But my mother was a great baker. So I also developed this sort of love of the process of making stuff because I learned to bake really young. And then, I don't know, and then I got older and I realized I really liked food and got out on my own, you know, in my early 20s and realized that I could just make stuff myself. And it didn't have to suck. And started going to restaurants and doing that sort of thing. Then started watching the cooking shows on TV because we went through this whole period where there were all of these like cooking shows, like all the time, you know, and great chefs of whoever. And I realized that, you know, you could actually cook for a living.
And you have this realization that, oh my God, food doesn't have to be terrible.
Yeah.
I could actually make something that is not just going to be choke me.
Yeah. And so then, I went to culinary school and learned how to actually, and I learned a lot. I learned a lot, obviously learned even more about food in culinary school. But yeah, so.
Now, when you went to culinary school, I could talk about this all day. Stuff like this fascinates me. So when I think about culinary school, it's like, you know, I'm picturing some sort of, I don't know, some sort of like the, if you can draw, the, you know, the, like Polly the Pirate or whatever, but with more ladles or something. Like, where did you, like, how do you even figure out what school? Did you just open up the phone book or?
I actually went to the library and I checked out a book because there's sections in the reference department of the library that have all kinds of schools for like college catalogs and ways to help you choose a college and that sort of thing. And I found some books that had lists of culinary schools. And I looked to see, you know, where they were located, how much they cost, what kind of programs they offered. And I sent off for information on some of them. And basically, you know, had a few, was like, essentially it came down to, I really would have loved to have gone to the CIA in San Francisco, but I couldn't afford to live in San Francisco for 2 years because they had a two-year program. I really would have liked to have gone to the school in upstate New York, but again, I could not afford to live in upstate New York, and plus the winters would probably kill me. Then there was a four-year program in Orlando, Florida that you could work for Disney, where you actually go to school, culinary school, at the Disney Culinary Academy, and half the time you're working there in the Disney restaurants and at Epcot.
Like actually working like in the kitchen or whatever.
Right, and getting paid. But the thing is, that was a four-year program, and conscribing myself for 4 years
work
to
at
Florida.
Disney.
In Florida.
It's like 140 degrees outside.
Because I loathe humidity. And then what it came down to is also, I had been to Portland previously. I loved Portland. Saw there was a culinary school in Portland. I sent them, I called them up and whatever it was. I sent them information. I immediately got an acceptance letter. Apparently, they were really hard up for students at the time. Immediately got an acceptance letter like a day and a half later. Like as soon as they got my thing, they turned around.
Yes.
And I jumped on the phone with them and I said, well, I need to talk to you about like student loans because I have no money. They're like, no problem.
We'll figure something
out.
We'll
sign you right up. So it's like, yeah, okay. So
excellent.
And so then the next thing I knew, like a couple of months later, I was packing up my stuff like the Beverly Hillbillies and coming up to Portland.
Okay, that all leads me to this question. Why have you not made more of that apple shortbread cookie crisp stuff?
Well, lately it's been because...
I know you've been moving and you don't have access to any of your cooking implements.
So you liked that, did you?
Everybody liked that, including people who hadn't even had it. It was like Jenny Hieronymus posted some long thing. She's like, God damn it, when is Dawn going to put the recipe for that shortbread apple thing on the... Because we were just raving about how good it was. And then immediately I just got a whole bunch of people who were demanding the recipe. And then it's like, and then, not like I really forgot about it, but then it was like, you made it that one time and then you were, I don't know, the stuff happened and then you were gone and then you were moving and the whatever. And so you haven't made it a second time.
Well, I'll tell you what, you can find it online. If you just Google apple pie bars, you can find the recipe. I would suggest I'm trying to remember. I think the woman was Cake Spy. Might have been a woman who did an adaptation of it where she cut it down by half and then added caramel. Don't add the caramel, but you know, that's all I have to say. But,
apple
you know,
pie bars.
Apple pie bars.
Seriously, it was like the best thing ever. It was the best thing in the history of things. So I'm just, you know, all right. Okay, so where is this? Is there more than one location of this store you went to?
The Barber Hole. No.
And what's it called? World Foods?
Barber World Foods.
Excellent.
Yeah. And you can get like some of the same kinds of food that you get if you've ever been to Yahala, which is a very good Middle Eastern restaurant. You can get stuff like that in their deli. They've got baba ganoush and they've got lamb and they've got all kinds of stuff. It's just, and the fresh baked pitas, and it's great.
You know, have you noticed that hummus is a thing that didn't really exist in American cuisine until like 15 years ago? It was a thing that, I mean, you could like, find it, but then it's like, there was something, somebody just threw the hummus switch and then everybody was suddenly aware of it. It became a thing that they just served everywhere. I don't know where that came from.
I think hummus is one of those things that took a long time, particularly coming to Portland. Sort of like burritos and bagels. Like, you didn't really have them here, and then all of a sudden you did. I think Trader Joe's moving into the Portland area is particularly responsible for a lot of people figuring out hummus.
That probably did contribute to it. By the way, while you were doing this, you asked me before the show if I did anything last night, and here's how exciting my life is. See, I think it's like with some guys, it's like when they're, because, you know, my wife is gone right now, and so it's, I think some guys, when their wife is out of town, it becomes an excuse to do, you know, to do something crazy, to live the high life, to gallivant around the world, to drink champagne from the slippers of chorus girls. And whereas, like with me, and I think it's like you when Patrick leaves. I think when Patrick is gone for the night, or he's off, you know, and he's playing like Warhammer 40,000 or whatever, that for you it's a chance just to sort of sit there and not have to do anything. You can do exactly what you want to do with, which a lot of times is just sort of just immediately become totally sedentary. It's just like not even moving from the chair. So I actually spent. This is why when you said, you know, do anything last night, I said, no, my life is amazingly dull. It's because I spent, I think, like 2.5 hours last night upgrading various applications on my Mac. And then I spent a glorious 90 minutes searching for and deleting duplicate files on my Mac and then my external 2 terabyte hard drive. That was the bulk of my evening last night. Literally was identifying and deleting duplicate files on not just my Mac with its 80 gig hard drive, but on my 2 terabyte external hard drive.
You are a firebrand, sir.
And the thing is, and here's the retarded thing, is I get such joy from it. I get such satisfaction. It's the same reason I think I enjoy doing laundry, because it's just a way to sort and file and fold and put things in place. And I have this whole application that goes through and will locate duplicate files for you, and then you compare them by file size and by extension, and you compare them by the sorting system, you know, by the path where they reside on your hard drive. And then for me, here's the very best moment. The very best moment for me, here's the thing about emptying the trash on my computer, is that I find emptying the trash on my computer to be unbelievably satisfying.
I do too.
Mine doesn't even make the crinkly noise. Like, I have it turned off because I found that, you know, because otherwise it would just be happening all the time when we're in the air. Because I actually have installed on my... I realize now that I'm knee-deep into this. This is a mind-bogglingly dull story. But I have installed on my computer this application that automatically empties the trash once per hour, which I had to do because otherwise, when I would empty the trash manually, I found that I was unable to then move until it was done. I would go to, like, you know, empty trash? Why, yes, I do want to do that. And then I would just sit there and I would watch the status bar. And the thing is, on the Mac, especially if you're hooked up to an external hard drive, if you have deleted anything off the external hard drive, the next time it's hooked up to the Mac and you go to empty the trash, it sort of officially empties all the things that you have deleted off the hard drive, the external drive. It officially gets rid of them. And so I would have like 1,250 things in the trash bin. And when I would hit empty on the trash bin, it would say deleting item 1 of 1,250. And then I would just settle into the chair and I couldn't move until it was all done. It was just some sort of, like, I couldn't even look away. So I had to install this program to empty the trash once per hour. But last night, because I had nowhere to go, I had nothing to do, and I had no other obligations to meet, I actually turned off the auto... Even by my standards, this is a pointless and stupid story. I turned off the auto-empty feature on the trash can last night, deleted all my duplicate files, and then I sat, and I swear to God, I had like a microwave pizza from Safeway. I just sat there, I microwaved a pizza, and then I sat there and I watched the trash bin on my desktop empty for like 25 minutes. It was great. And it started with like deleting item 1 of 24,000. And then it was done about 20 minutes later. And I just had the feeling of greatest completion. And I had this long exhale at the end of it, and then I went to bed. And that was it. Yeah. The end. The exciting life of Rick Emerson. Hey, by the way, just, do you know what today is the anniversary of?
No.
You probably won't guess this. It's not a real anniversary in that it's the 17th anniversary. It's not like the five. It doesn't come like a 5 or a 10. It's the 17th anniversary. We were talking yesterday about things that make you feel old, and by you I mean both of us, because it was like the Smiths were putting out like the 25th anniversary edition of some record or something. Today is the 17th anniversary of the slow speed O.J. Simpson chase.
Oh,
17
wow.
years.
Wow.
Apparently ESPN's going to be doing a... ESPN, our friend Chris Sneedon says if you haven't seen the ESPN documentary, they're going to be showing it at 2 a.m. tomorrow morning. It's well worth the space on your VCR. I recommend watching it. So there you go. So just in case you A, have forgotten a lot about that, B, have time to kill, or C, were not yet alive when that happened, the O.J. Simpson slow speed chase 17 years ago today, and then the documentary will be happening tonight on ESPN. So where were you, Dawn Taylor, when the O.J. Simpson slow speed chase happened?
I was actually in Los Angeles because my mother was going into the hospital to have surgery, and she ended up having a stroke and dying. And so I had to take a leave of absence from work. and spent a lot of my time there hanging out somewhat with her friends in bars watching the O.J. Simpson coverage on the TV.
Because it
bars.
Just went forever. It was like an all... Because then he did that thing of showing up in Brentwood and just parking in the driveway for like 9 hours. And then it got so dark they couldn't actually see anything. And then we realized if anything happened, we weren't going to be able to tell anyway because they didn't, because it was not illuminated, his driveway.
Yeah, it's kind of this weird thing, like this whole process of my mom going into the hospital and me being in the hospital with her and then going home and doing stuff and then having to do like the aftermath of her dying and going and doing all of that stuff, all of which had this like constant, if this was a movie, that would be one of those things.
The
in
tying
the movie.
Together.
Yeah, that like everywhere I went, everything I did, it was on the TV, it was on the radio. It was just this constant coverage. Because I was in, like I said, I was in the LA area at the time as well. And so it was like, they just shut down everything for that at the time. They weren't running soap operas during the day. They were doing nothing but OJ coverage.
If this was a Paul Haggis film, that would be the, if this was a Robert Altman film, that would be the unifying event that we look at 17 different people across the county as the O.J. Simpson slow speed chase unfolds in the background.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Well, now I feel like a dick because I've inadvertently stumbled into some sort of horrible memory.
Well, it's like, because I was thinking about that and I went, oh, wow, that means it was 17 years ago that my mom died. And then I thought about saying that and I went, nah, that's a downer.
That's a big buzzkill
for Friday. I'm
not going
to say that.
All right. Well, let me just segue from that to this. Speaking of downers, not really, but so somebody says, before you sign off today, and I think we should do this before Jim gets in the room because otherwise it'll just be tedium for him. Before you sign off today, you guys should predict who you think the killer is going to be on Sunday's finale. So Sunday is the, here's the other thing, and I'm not saying, again, it's not like I'm glad that my wife is gone or anything, but here's the, because she is always a week behind on the killing. And because she doesn't get a lot of days off, and she works like 12-hour shifts. So as a result, I never watch The Killing live, not even anything close to live. Like, I always have to wait until, like, 2 a.m. when she's gone to bed, and then I watch it. But Sunday, I'm going to be able to watch it more or less when it unfolds. And by the way, if anybody tries to contact me anytime Sunday, there's like a one-in-one chance that I'm not going to answer the phone, I'm not going to be checking my email, I'm not going to be online, I don't want to know any spoilers. If anything leaks out, if the critic's copy sort of goes online and everything is revealed, I don't want to know. So I'm going to shut myself off from all civilization and communication on Sunday for the killer season finale, which is going to be happening on Sunday.
And so, I will be too, because come hell or high water, I am digging our TV out of our, one of the two TVs, out of our storage facility and hooking it up and having the box hooked up, and I am actually watching it.
Because otherwise you'd have to wait like hours and hours to try to track it down online somehow
Whole, well, the whole show up to this point, the whole show, I have watched it first thing Monday morning. And so this time,
not going to work.
I am watching it on Sunday night. God damn it.
All right, so final prediction for who you think the killer is on this Sunday's finale of The Killing.
My problem with that is that I had made the decision that
it was Gwen.
I thought it was going to be Gwen.
By the way, spoilers about previous episodes.
Yeah. But the thing is, I don't know, because the thing the show has done is been able to twist it around to the point that every time you think you have an idea of what's going on, it turns out that there's something completely else happening.
And then because they've done so many red herrings, or not even red herrings, but they've raised so many possibilities that turn out to not be true, then you wonder if they are, in fact, playing some meta game, where now this time you think, well, it can't possibly be Richmond because it would just be another one of their dead ends, but then they invert everything and the guy that they bring up as the possibility this time really is the killer.
Yeah.
And you just don't know. Also, by the way, Thomas Gill wanted to note that if you end up not being able to get your TV out of storage or whatever, that The Killing is available on iTunes almost immediately after airing. So for less than you might expect.
I've been leaning towards Gwen, but I am thinking, because we haven't gotten any specific reason other than he's kind of unlikable to think it's him, I'm thinking it's the other guy, the weaselly...
Jamie.
I think it might be Jamie, just simply for the reason of that him being sort of dogged about, his entire raison d'etre seems to be, Richmond's campaign. And so I could see him you know, wanting to get rid of her purely because of that.
Well, they have indicated a couple different times that those guys have known each other forever and that they've worked together for a long time. And there was that whole thing where he agreed to, you know, to pretend to be fired so he could go work for Adams. And he was the guy who said that he didn't want to show Richmond the footage of him with Rosie because he had to have plausible deniability. So he does seem to be a purely political animal, that his entire life, as you said, his whole reason for being just revolves around Richmond.
He would have a motive. He would also have the connection to the car that was, you know, and so.
I don't know. And plus, it just, I don't know. We don't know a whole lot about the details of the crime. They haven't given a lot of autopsy notes, or maybe they did early on and I've sort of forgotten them. But it does seem like, I mean, Gwen's not like sort of a shrinking Violet, but it seems like that is a crime that requires some kind of physicality. And even though, you know, Rosie's only like a 17-year-old girl, you got to figure killing somebody probably isn't that easy. I mean, you know, it's unless you get, you know, like your chloroform-soaked rag or something. Killing somebody takes a little bit of that takes some doing. That takes some brute force. And I just don't necessarily know. It might seem a little implausible that Gwen somehow did that, unless again she just whacked her on the head with a hammer or whatever. So, all right, entirely possible. So if you had to make a choice, as of like you had to seal it in an envelope right now today.
I think I'm just going to.
If there were money at stake, if there was money on the table for getting it right, and you had to place a bet right now,
I'm honest to God, I do not feel confident about this, but I will at this point. I will say Jamie.
Okay. Oh, somebody says, what about the nightmare scenario of it not being resolved Sunday? We're all assuming it'll be resolved. What if they drag it in the next year? Oh, I didn't even consider that. Why would you say that? Why would you even type that?
I don't think they would, though, because they have said that it's going to be, because it's each is a day in the investigation, and...
Well, and also they had no idea of knowing if the show was going to be renewed.
Yeah.
You son of a bitch. Don't ever say that again, whoever you were.
And the Danish show, there's been three seasons of the Danish show, and each one had a different crime.
Yeah, and I just don't think that they would. I think that it's a well-done enough show. The show is done well enough that they show such a savvy and an understanding for television that they must know that, A, you're not necessarily guaranteed a second season, like, ever at this point. And also, I think they would know that that would ruin the momentum. That would ruin the dynamic of the show. So let's not even consider that possibility. If I had to place money right now... If I had to place money right now, I think I would probably also go Jamie. I think if I had to seal my answer in an envelope, I would say Jamie. I think my backup choice would be Richmond. I don't think Gwen doesn't seem like a realistic. She doesn't seem like a realistic suspect to me. But I do think that Jamie is probably the guy who ended up doing it. That would be my guess. I don't really know. But that would be my guess. Somebody here is, let's see, Miguel is saying that he thinks it might be the Butch Casino security chick. Sort of a late-breaking suspect. I mean, I guess it didn't really seem like they had much motive because she was a customer and she was a patron, although she was underage, too, so who knows. And also, but they seem to be largely exempt from... from the man's law, so it seems like even if Rosie was there breaking some sort of a law, or, you know, it was just engaging in underage, you know, she was gambling or money laundering or something, they're not really going to be on the hook for that, probably. So I'm saying if I had to guess at this point, it's probably Jamie, maybe Richmond, probably Jamie, because he would have access to the... He would have access to the email account as well, because there was that whole thing of them trying to root out who the guy was, you know, trying to do some investigation to find out exactly who it was that was sending leaked information, or they were sending information from the inside. So I think Jamie has access to the email account. All right. Let's see. Somebody else says, no, it's the mayor. So, all right. So everybody sort of be thinking about it. And then, I don't know, as it gets sort of the end of the day, we'll do a final round of guesses. We'll do a little break here. We'll come back on the other side. Mr. Big Jim Willie going to be in the studio with Humor Me, Comedy 101. It's going to be coming up here in just a few. We've got a clown watch coming up later on, as well as numerous other bits of information and infotainment for you from the news pile. So you stay there. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's Friday. We are back after this. Don't go anywhere. We return in just a few. You're listening to the Emerson News Network. Stay right there.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
worked so far, but we're not out yet.
I want to know what you're thinking. There are some things you can't hide. I want to know what you're feeling. Tell me what's on your mind.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
is your specialty. But could I ever need enough for you to set me free?
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. To the people who have asked, the last song there was called Where Would I Be Without IBM? It's Information Society. Who's Paul Robb, I believe, lives in Portland. In Portland? In Beaverton? Somewhere on the outskirts of Portland? Lives here or lived here? Or anyway. Oh, hey, just as a side note, speaking of nerds, so, you know, 2 days ago, I guess it was Seamus' birthday, and so we were doing the thing we always do with people, where it was the top five songs that might have been playing in the background as his mother was impregnated. So Seamus then sent me this text message that night. He goes, I asked my mom what song I was conceived to. She first of all, I mean, props to you, sir, for having the intestinal fortitude to actually form those words while on the phone with your mother. Asked my mom what song I was conceived to. She responded, I don't know. I was probably too drunk to remember.
All right.
And then he types, ha, 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 sob. All right, so there you go. All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's Friday. Thank you for joining us. Still to come, we have a clown watch today. Also, Mr. Big Jim Willig joining us in mere moments with another installment of Humor Bee Comedy 101, as well as his own observations on the world which surrounds us, binds us together.
And I have redacted my guess.
Love of God. All right. So what is your, within the space of just like 90 seconds, you changed your guess on the killing?
I did, because, well, I have decided I'm going to stick to my guns. Through most of the show, I believed it was Belko. And then it got like really, really, we found out just how creepy he was. And I think the thing is, I think I decided it couldn't be Belko because he was just so creepy. It just seemed so obvious. And then he led us to the clue about her going off on the ferry.
Right.
And so we believed that, and I think we believed that obviously he was just sort of an informational source and a creep, but he wasn't actually the murderer. And I'm just still thinking, I don't know, I'm thinking now that the show has veered us so strongly in the direction of the political campaign, I'm thinking this might just be another misdirection, and then it really, really is Bell. I'm going to stick with Belko, because he doesn't, we still don't know for a fact that he actually has an alibi. All that happened was, it's like, wow, he's creepy, and his mom is creepy, and he had pictures of the, and then he went, I was listening to her talk about stuff, and I heard that she was going to be going to see somebody. That's all we know. We don't even know that he's actually telling the truth specifically about that time frame. So.
And the name of the ferry was, I guess it's, it doesn't really,
Adela or
it doesn't
something.
Really matter, but yeah, it's Adela or Amala or Amanda or something. And so it was that Lyndon and Holder had him in the room and they were leaning on him. And he finally confessed to being in the house, being in the room next door and sort of just eavesdropping on her. And then listening to her on the phone saying she was going to meet somebody named like Alana. Or whatever, and then Lyndon the next day is jogging and sees that that's the name of the ferry, and so you think?
Yeah. I think that Belko being freakishly obsessed with Stan and Mitch's family. I don't even think it was any kind of like weird sexual component. I think it's because he just views them as this perfect family that he wants to be part of. I think that when he found out that she was hooking, he lost it. That's what I'm thinking. And it still doesn't explain the car, though.
It doesn't explain the missing money from their bank account, either.
No.
Unless he withdrew all his money thinking that he would lavish it on her as a high-end hooker.
Yeah.
And she said no.
I don't know.
How would that knob get access to a campaign car? I mean, I guess, you know, I mean, maybe he knows people because he was a hoodlum, but it seems like he was a low-rent hoodlum anyway. He was just trafficking in, like, bad lotto tickets or something.
I don't know.
I think your theory's full of, no, it's a sponge of a theory. I think it just,
Well, I'm just stabbing in the dark anyway, so I'm just going to stick to my guns, and I'm just going to stick with my Belko guess.
Okay.
No matter what.
All right. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Just, if nothing else, to get rid of this creepy music, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Radio Show our good friend Mr. Big Jim Willick. Hello, sir.
Hello. Let's bring on creepy music of a whole different nature.
Once again, you're wearing the Ghostbuster shirt. Is that going to be your regular Friday shirt now?
I did realize it as I was putting it on, but it is my Friday go to meeting kind of shirt. I like it. It suits me well.
It makes a statement.
It does. Unfortunately, regardless of the fact that it's a double X, I washed it since last week, and it is now subsequently shrunk ever so slightly. I didn't realize it until I put it on. I'm just like, it feels a little snug. And then, like, I reached above my head to reach something. I looked down, and it turned into, like, a tube top.
It emphasizes your curves.
It does. And, I don't need that. I don't need that at all.
I don't know.
I need a trench coat. I need a barrel with two straps over the shoulders.
Suddenly you're like John McCain. You just can't brush your own hair.
No. Just lost in a bus station.
Yeah.
Wondering where it all went wrong.
No. Did you wash the shirt in hot?
I washed it in cold, but I dried it under high heat.
Yeah.
And that'll do it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Well, you don't have a clothesline out back at the homestead.
No, and the thing is, it's like one of those things where I'm like, I like this shirt so much, I'm now considering losing weight so that I can wear. Yeah, not for my own personal health or anything like that, but because I want this shirt to stick around a lot while, because I have shirts that I have not worn in years because I mean, they still could potentially fit me, but I've refused to get rid of them.
Well, now this could be, now here's the thing, now this show, we could track the eventual makeover and transformation of Jim Willick, the transmogrification of you into a different man, because you've talked about how you've laid off whatever substances over the last year or so.
That's
you decided
right.
to clean up a little in that regard and just have a walk a straighter path there.
Yeah, it's been steadily swelling ever since, just getting larger.
Now is
and larger.
That it? Now have you now, because now you because you quit? Is it you quit drinking?
I quit drinking. I quit smoking, and I quit smoking.
Okay, so you quit drinking and drugging, as they say,
pretty much.
And so now, have you compensated for that? Have you done the thing of like, because you go to like every AA meeting, and there's just like a wreath of cigarette smoke outside.
Well, yeah, I mean, and the thing is, I can't even enjoy that anymore. Or I mean, it's like I'm the guy that's like kind of like. goaltending at the donut box. Like, I am there. I'm eyeballing not only what I have, but what other people may potentially get. So I'm playing the defensive game, so I know that if no one likes the custard, leave that one for last so that I know I can at least have that to take.
Because that's the other thing at every 12-step meeting, where there's just a mound of donuts and cookies everywhere. And then you see the other thing of people going over and getting coffee and putting 70 packets of sugar into it.
Yes.
So have you started to... Do you think that you have ramped up your food consumption since you're not drinking?
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's kind of like a pat on the back for not for sticking with the sobriety thing for as long as I have. It's like, well, I deserve, you know,
a cruller.
Yeah, or five, you know, and to stick a couple Slim Jims through it like a skewer, like a kebab, if you will, or I could go for two double cheeseburgers considering I haven't had a drink in almost a half a year. That's good for me. So yeah, I'm one of those guys like, well, when we found him, you know, his blood and alcohol levels are totally clean, but like there was literally pastry in his bloodstream.
But of course they're saying this as in the background there's a forklift going out of the side of your house.
He died like he lived, covered in Jello jigglers from head to toe.
Now have you ever done like a diet plan or like any sort of like a structured approach to your weight?
I have actually, and there was a time where I managed to get all the way down to under 233 pounds, which I hadn't been that light since like eighth grade. So I've always been like a larger guy by nature, but I had just kind of kind of let things kind of slide. But when I was drinking and smoking, I had much more like desire to go to the gym. Now that I don't, I'm just like, I could.
That's odd.
I just want to sit here and watch Glee and eat snack foods. So good.
I would. What are you doing right there?
That was a character I created on the Marconi Show called Obesius. And
don't get me wrong, it's fantastic. Yeah. I just didn't know if that was an original voice.
It was. He's a competitive eater. And every summer he gets kicked out of Whole Foods for chaining himself to the frozen entree section.
Obesius.
Yes.
That's wonderful. I wouldn't think that if you were drinking and smoking that you would then be like, I'm drinking, I'm smoking, I might as well go do some reps. I would think it would be the opposite, that you would have, you know, you'd have no energy or you'd just be hungover or short of breath or something.
No, it was weird. And like, I don't know if it apparently it seemed to help, but I used to sweat a lot more when I was hungover, because the alcohol kind of leaving the system and everything else, plus the fact that you're nauseous from being hungover meant I was eating less. So, it's kind of like the perfect storm of new of better, healthier conditions coming together to make this horrible, like, you know.
Well, and we talked before, too, the whole thing, the reason there's the giant mound of donuts and the people putting the 17 packs of sugar in their coffee at the AA meetings, too, is that when you're drinking, the alcohol turns to sugar in your bloodstream, in your system. So when you, like, stop drinking, you start having these carbohydrate cravings like crazy.
No joke.
And so it's like, all of a sudden, it's like, I want sugar. I want lots of sugar. Sugar, 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 sugar.
Yeah, I want to make a sugar sandwich.
And, nicotine is an appetite suppressant and a stimulant. And so that is, it's like a low grade kind of speed that you're having anyway. So
I think big tobacco had me in a very good place when it came to staying in shape, at least somewhat.
We're just sitting here listing all the glorious attributes of drinking and smoking. Really, they're health foods, basically.
Also, in addition to being an appetite suppressant, also, I think your metabolism lowers ever so slightly as well when you quit smoking because it does keep your metabolism revved a bit having all the nicotine.
Well, it's a stim. Your heart rate is up and your blood pressure and your pulse and all those things are up.
So your metabolism is slowing and then you're mainlining donuts and it's like, I don't know what went
but
wrong.
I'm healthy. I've never
so
felt better in my life.
This is so good for me, this clean living.
God, yeah, that can't beat it.
So at a certain point, the Ghostbuster shirt is going to have to go behind glass as sort of a target.
Yeah, like an objective, like an inspiration kind of a thing. I figure if it gets to a point where I'm like, well, there's no hope for me, I might as well I'll get it tattooed on my body. Like, I'll have it like a sleeve, like just completely like gray with the whole thing. I may even add, because that way I can add to it, so to speak. I can just...
Have you? I forget the guy's name, but you know, Sarah has a Sarah's a friend of a larger, a barrel-chested man, a man of substance, of size. But he has the best tattoo ever. He has a six-pack tattooed onto his stomach.
Ooh!
So it's but he's huge. He's got the huge beer gut. But then there's like a six-pack, like you know, like 300 Spartacus style, you know, like a six-pack tattooed on there, which is just awesome.
Yeah, there's something that you can buy in the stores now that it's basically kind of like a six-pack grid that you strap to your torso so that it kind of – it's like a partial girdle. So it gives you the illusion that you have a six-pack under your shirt. But I kind of have a feeling that mine would be more like a cookie cutter, like I'd be kind of oozing through it. Yeah.
So it's like a it's like a truss slash sort of like a – like one of those
stencil
fake,
almost.
Or one of those butt enlargers that you could like – or like falsies for your gut or something.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, then. So, yeah. You know, they do. Was it Byron that did the ad for that weird girdle truss thing?
Yes, he did.
There's that picture of him with
his arms raised.
Like, kind of arms up.
Like he just won the Special Olympics.
Yeah, that's posted on the.
I'm first! Through the tape.
That's actually taped, tacked up on the wall at the Cascadia Studio.
I'm sorry.
Every week when I go do my show, I sit there and I stare at this picture of Byron in these like spandex underpants.
In the words of Shepherd Book, you are going to a special hell. Special hell for that.
I guess you probably. And the thing is, like, you know, God love Byron Peck and all, but it seems that I was going to say, well, have you thought about some sort of Spank type product, but the thing is, that just seems then it's like, you know, then you're just cheating yourself, and also it seems like that does something bad to your internal organs over time if you're just packing 5 pounds of mud into a 1 pound sack.
Well, the Spanx things are designed for people, and I'll say they're Spanx specifically are designed for women, but the products are designed for people that are essentially already kind of normal sized, but just have like a little bit of extra something.
A pocket of flab.
So that they can put on these like super, super elastic like bike shorts basically, and it will kind of like compress the tiny little pooch they have around their belly. Somebody like me, who is essentially, you know, a sphere with a head on top, it changes nothing. It just makes me really uncomfortable.
Like a water weenie.
Not going to just suddenly fool people into thinking I'm thin because I've put on tight pants.
Well, yeah, it's we have a lot of corsets and cinchers and stuff like that at the store.
A cincher,
yeah, which is pretty much like everything,
so like a bustier or something that tightens, yeah, minus makes it up real tight.
Minus the cups or anything, right, for the boobs. It just kind of like sits underneath it, and you can sort of put it over like a blouse or a frock or something if you want to kind of you know.
It's like that thing Kate Winslet has in Titanic, where her mom is like putting her shoe in her back, like, hold on.
Yeah,
pretty
much.
Pulling the laces really tight. Yeah.
When a lot of our female employees, if somebody ever wants to try one on, we'll be like, you know, let me know if you need help lacing you up. And then again, there's that sound of like leather stretching.
Right.
As like, you know, they're like, heave! And like the oxen are pulling it in the opposite direction. But we have some gals that come in there, and they kind of think that by getting one of those, it's going to magically, but the mass has got to go somewhere.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, unless we're going to bring back like the swooning rooms from like the early 19th century.
And you can only compress yourself down so far before, you know, it starts coming out your ears or whatever.
Yeah, Japanese binding takes years to do.
And then you get the fat chicks in the corset who have just the big lumps of like, it looks like they have four boobs basically because they have the cleavage and the boob, and then they have the armpit boob.
Okay, I've seen that before. I've seen the four boob look.
And that is not a good look, ladies.
Don't
do that.
Take that, Total Recall.
Well, that's like any guy who's over the any goth guy who's over the age of 23 probably. You know, and you get those guys. It's like the chicks can pull off the goth look, I would say. Probably like on an ongoing basis. I mean, just indefinitely, as long as they sort of pick and choose what to wear and, you know, how to wear it. And, you know, it's like you can be a 45-year-old goth chick and look good as long as you sort of have, you know, like some kind of an eye for how to dress yourself in the first place. But then you get those guys who are just like some guys, the guy in the fishnets looks like he just came from a Bauhaus concert or something. But he's like 35. And it's like you see that guy occasionally, like, you know, still at a Bauhaus concert, you know, like at Bumbershoot or something, and you're just going, dude, you can't, you have to stop that. But it's like, but that is the thing with like with those girls. It's like, it's, you know what it is? It's the guy who wears, or the woman who wears the same clothing that they were wearing in high school. And guys will do that and we're like, I wear the same size jeans I did when I was 15. But it's because it's just hooked underneath this massive Vesuvius flow of gut that they have. Where it's like, you know, it's, I guess it is like the muffin top thing or whatever. But it's even beyond that. It's like they're putting the pants on and just cinching them just above their pelvis.
Yeah, it's like a pumpkin on a golf tee.
It's totally what that is.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that it never occurred to me that there was actually the kind of a thriving industry in you know, like cinchers or things that sort of, you know, like the because the trust, like you think of that as being a thing like your grandfather wore, or like Milton Berle, you know, was laced into before he went onto television or something, but you know, but maybe not.
Every time I hear trust, I think of Dan Aykroyd and Fred Garvin, male prostitute.
Totally.
Somebody says, by the way, don't forget about back boobs. Yuck.
Oh yeah, the back boobs.
What's a back boob? Oh, is that where it's like your back flab gets compressed?
Yeah, when you see the chick in the tight corset and she's walking away from you, and she's got the back fat that's kind of glomping over the top.
Glomping.
Yeah.
What a pleasurable word.
That's a great word.
Onomatopoeia
wonderful.
Will keep me awake tonight.
Okay.
Glomp.
It is the... it's the Rick Emerson radio program. I'm just saying that maybe you should shrink the shirt a little further. And then just, you know, and then at home and just sort of put it under some lights in a corner, like in a little shrine, and be like, this will be my victory. This will be my shirt of triumph.
Yes.
It'll be your victory shirt that you can put on.
Yeah. There have been several. I haven't. I used to have. I've kept the fat pants because I knew that there might be a time where I would slide back into it. And now they're like there. I've got like one pair of jeans left. And Malia, God bless her heart, is very much trying to like, well, you know, we can go out and we can get you some new pants. I'm like, no, we're treating the symptom, not the problem.
Yeah,
we're just throwing more pants at a fat ass. We need to get the ass smaller and into the pants that I already have.
That's the thing they always say too, is like, if you lose weight, the first thing you should do is get rid of all of the clothing you had when you were bigger, because you like, they're like, burn the road back. You know, make it
salt it so that nothing may grow.
Yeah, they're like, make it so inconvenient and or expensive for you if you to have to refurnish your wardrobe that like you can't do it. That like the cost alone will keep you from gaining the weight back because you don't have anything that fits.
Yeah.
And they're like, if you find yourself having to go to the store and buy, you know, like the 15th pair of new pants because you keep gaining weight, like that might be a small impediment, you know, to putting the weight back on or something. So
yeah, now I have I went from having fat jeans to having like fat socks. Like there are certain socks that I can't wear anymore because I think that my feet and my ankles have kind of like cankled and are now getting.
You don't really think your feet is getting bigger.
I don't. Well, not normally, no. But I guess, you know, I need like some Kenoki pads or something.
No, you can get fat pretty much everywhere, really.
Okay.
Everywhere there's me, there's a little bit of fat getting stronger and stronger as the days go by. So.
All right then. Here's the thing. Here's the sort of the Rubicon for you though. The dividing line is whether or not you're buying those things from that Hints for Heloise home catalog, where like the same catalog that gives you like the petty paws that where you're like the pumice stone for your corns, and the, like the
human zester.
And yes, and the fancy return address thing that you put on your envelope for the holidays that has like the name of you and your wife with like little sleigh bells in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
If from that same catalog you're ever buying that waistband expander, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Where it's like a two loop little thing, and it's like if like your pants won't quite button, it's like it artificially extends the waist of your pants so that you can once again close them up. That is, I think, if you are ever buying that, I think that is when you need to just, you know, you need
these
to
are
just,
my lucky pants are the ones that I got that free 72 ounce steak when I was in Texas that one time.
Which, by the way, so here's the thing, I didn't know this. Not only did they sell the waist expanders for pants, I didn't know this, they sell that for chicks too. I found this out some years ago. They sell that for bras, where it's like, because you know the bra is like the hook and the loop, and they will actually sell a standalone piece of fabric that is just covered, has hooks and loops on it that you kind of go and you patch it into the middle.
Yeah, we have a multi pack of those. So if you have like
really
a white bra, a black bra, or I think there's like a third color that kind of varies,
the flesh colored bra.
Yeah. So I mean, if you have any kind of a bra such as that, you can come in and kind of like retread that bra just one more time.
See This, I'm telling you right now, this is the greatest country in the world if you have any kind of imagination and just a little bit of venture capital. Because you must just be able to sit on a park bench and just watch people walk by and just come up with ideas like by the dozens, you know, that you can
shell
people.
How about a shoe that can hold soup so your body keeps it warm? And then when you're ready to eat it, you'll have a straw that runs up your leg and then you can just sort of suck it out of your cuff.
By the way, our friend Jesus in the OC says, I would like for you to know that the phrase glomping back fat has made
It's trending on Twitter right now.
Made my penis shrink up inside me. So there you go. That's
it's now nailing pieces of plywood to my foreskin.
All right. At the news desk, it's Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A man is in stable condition after he was bitten by a timber rattlesnake in New Jersey's Pinelands. A 25-year-old Ocean County resident, whose name has not been released, stopped on Route 679 in Tuckerton and tried to use a stick to move the snake off of the road.
Okay, don't... No. Why would you move the snake?
Because he didn't want to hurt the snake. The snake apparently did not feel the same way towards him.
And he was apparently bitten in a town made up by Richard Scarry, too.
Environmental Protection Department spokesman Larry Ranganese said, the snake squirmed free, wrapped itself around the man's arm, and sank its fangs into its hand. The man drove 3 miles to seek help and was flown by helicopter to the hospital. Timber rattlesnakes are the only venomous snakes in that part of the Pinelands.
When death came to Tuckerton. So the snake was in the road, and he didn't want to squash it, and so he thought he would just broom it out of the way.
Oh, someone's going to hurt the poor snake. I'll get this stick and move it out of the way.
See, that's the thing where the rattlesnake knows it doesn't have to move for anybody. The rattlesnake is like, I'm here, you're going to go around me, or, you know, whatever. You know,
snake
or turn
versus
back.
Prius.
Seriously, I got to tell you, I've only had in my life one experience with a rattlesnake. But of course, you know, but living in the Northwest, it's like that is sort of a thing that you get kind of pounded into you early on. Two things, I guess three maybe, because brown recluse spiders, although I don't know that I've ever seen one of those. But the two things you always get told about, and I guess every region has this, in the Northwest are black widow spiders and rattlesnakes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and black widow spiders I have seen, I don't know, maybe like once a year or so I'll come across one of those like lurking around the house somewhere. Like there was that thing a couple years ago where the KGW was doing stories on it like once a day where there was some huge, huge spike in the number of black widows that they were finding in Southeast Portland only.
Oh, good.
It wasn't anywhere else. It was just Southeast Portland. And it had to do with like, I don't know, it had been a real mild winter, and so some specific kind of tree whose bark fell on the ground and formed like a natural habitat for them, like was everywhere, was like, you know, double the amount or something. So there were black widow spiders like everywhere. And so then I found, I'm not trying to freak everybody out. If it makes you feel better, I didn't really care for it either. But then I found like a huge like condo of black widows in my garage.
And I had middle-aged black widow spiders with like comb-overs and,
well,
you know,
it was in like the worst possible thing too. It was in like, it was like a sort of a pile of like cinder blocks, basically.
Oh,
you know, the
geez.
Kind that have the holes in them or whatever. Yeah. You know, and it's like they had just been there when we moved in, and that I'd never bothered to get rid of. But of course, for them, that's like, you know, it's like having a rent controlled apartment. You know,
well,
it's perfect.
Squatters' rights, as
totally.
Far as they were concerned.
And so I walked into the garage to get like a book or something, or like something out of a box that was in there, and then it's like you just look over and there's, you know, and there's like a bunch of, you know, spiders just kind of sitting there just like playing poker, looking over at you like, what? You know, and you're like, ah, crap. And then I had to do the full-on Apocalypse Now thing of just getting a bunch of those like bug bomb things and just Agent Oranging the entire place. Just, you know, I regret nothing. Throwing them in. The kind that actually say, like, leave your home for 2 days after using these. So I found black widow spiders. But then growing up, you would also see that I remember as a kid, my parents would take me to the Maryhill Museum every now and again. And there are these freakish signs everywhere on the grounds of the Maryhill Museum saying rattlesnakes in area, which, you know, as a kid, you don't really kind of understand what that means. You don't really get that that's a theoretical warning that the climate and environment are such that they might support the life of rattlesnakes that may or may not. When it says like rattlesnakes in area, and then your parents are just taking you by the hand and like making you walk across the lawn, like you wonder what has gone wrong, like why you're being made this serpentine gauntlet that you're having to pass. But I remember going fishing with my dad once when I was a kid at this pond down the not too far from our house, and we were walking along like the path to ye old fishing hole. And there was
whistling,
and then it's like we heard like that sound, which is that like thing of the rattlesnake. And I got to tell you, and I think I must have been like maybe 8 or 9, and I don't think I'd ever, and I guess maybe I'd seen them on television or National Geographic or something. But it's like that is a sound that is programmed, I think, into the human psyche through mm-hmm. evolution. Just like you know to instinctively be afraid of fire and spiders and height and whatever. That, I think, is a sound that just through natural selection, we have been programmed to recognize and be terrified of. Because I heard that noise, and it's like I didn't have to be told what it was. It was like I just immediately froze and did not move. And then across the path in front of me, the snake just kind of went whoosh, and it was just sort of a, like he was just crossing the road. Like that was his sort of like, that was his kind of, you know, toot toot thing at the intersection. And he crossed, and then it was like,
walk sign is on.
Yeah, and I kind of waited there for a while. And then, of course, my dad, who was just like a jerk in every conceivable way, my dad just said, well, okay, let's go. And then just like, you know, it took me by the hand, and like we just kept walking, like right past where the snake had like just been. Whereas to me, that's like nature's way of saying, like, not only don't come here, but like go home. Turn around and go home.
Play Nintendo in the attic.
Yeah, get a Pong machine instead.
Nature is not for you.
No, you should not be here ever. Jesus.
Yeah, my fear is, and I don't know, this could be irrational, but because of the amount of meth houses that just have sprouted up all over the place, you couple that with, like, the fact that it gets into like the walls and like the tapestry and everything else. Then of course you get spiders that kind of climb in there and they get exposed to it. Then you get some kind of like breed of like super spiders that never sleep and then they super mega reproduce.
Yeah, I don't know. Spiders are just, you know, they're deeply, deeply unnerving. They're, you know, the thing about spiders that makes them so creepy is that they bear no relation to anything you see like in the regular sized world.
Yeah.
You know, I guess except for like some seafood like lobsters or something. It's like you just don't. You know, it's like I could, you know, there's a lot of things like rats and, you know, which can theoretically, you know, they can bite you, or they can give you rabies or something. But it's like, you know, a rat, you know, you can kind of look at that and go, well, it's kind of like a huge hamster, you know, where it's like a real tiny dog with a long tail. But it's like a spider doesn't look like anything. A spider looks like something from hell. It just looks like something right out of a Hieronymus Bosch painting.
Yeah. And the sea crustaceans or whatever that are basically just sea insects are bigger and they're kind of cartoonish, so they get that edge taken off a little bit. Spiders are scary because they have that alien look about them, and then they're tiny, so you can't just sort of like boot them away like you can a rat or some other animal.
Also, they could climb inside your ears while you sleep.
Thank you for that.
I'm just saying.
Oh my God.
I'm just
why?
Saying, well, I'm saying,
why would you?
I'm saying.
Or your mouth if you sleep with your mouth open.
I'm saying that's why a lobster isn't that terrifying. I think a lobster, you know what, when like in your.
Now I gotta have nightmares about lobster or whatever, hamsters crawling into my ears.
The point I'm making is that a lobster, like you don't want a lobster just like maybe climbing into your shoe or something, but on the other hand, like a lobster, you look at it and you go, ah, hold on a second. You get a shovel and you kind of move it aside. You're like a lobster doesn't freak you out because it's not gonna sidle into your nose while you're asleep.
No, I think unbanded lobsters though really freaked me out though.
You don't want to be pinched,
scare
I guess.
Me. No, but I mean, couldn't they snap off like one of your fingers like a parrot?
I don't. What do you mean like a parrot?
I remember as a child, I remember we went to Busch Gardens in L.A. and they had this whole thing where they had this whole area with these parrots and cockatoos and things like that. And the tour guide said that their beaks were so strong that they could like snap a broomstick with their beak if they wanted to buy. And as a child, I don't even know if it's true or not, but as a child, that terrified me. And ever since then, every time I was ever around like a big bird like that, they just freak me the hell out because I'm convinced they're going to lunge at me and like just bite off one of my fingers.
I don't even know if that's true. Now that I think about it, I don't even really know what a parrot is. I mean, I get birds confused really easily, like parrots and minor birds and toucans and whatever.
Well, I mean, I figure that odds are that was just told to the kids to keep them from like running up to the birds and grabbing them and like, talk like Aladdin, and like smacking them in the face.
That'll take off your hand.
Yeah, it's like odds are I'd say maybe a breadstick. I don't know about a broomstick. But with lobsters, because, I mean, they're just like they're all meat and muscle on those two little points. They get a hold of you just the right area. They'll do something.
Especially
damage.
The big one, because they all have, like the male lobsters, they all have like one normal claw and one huge claw, like Hellboy.
Yeah.
That's like their power claw.
No, you're right. And the thing about lobsters, too, is that like they you talk about the spider fear being programmed into our cultural consciousness. I think
by radio people like you, jerk.
I think lobsters at this point, the word must have spread through the lobster community that we're engaging in this horrible genocide where we just toss them into boiling water. So, I mean, they have every motive to just. And the thing about that claw is, I mean, that claw only needs to be big enough to go around your jugular. I mean, that's it. I mean, it doesn't really need to snap off your whole head.
Yeah, I just had this weird image in my head of some kind of lobster PR firm, like Gary Lobsterman. Like my job is to help the lobster and human communities get along so that less of my brethren are tossed into cauldrons and served at Red Lobster.
By the way, apparently blue and gold macaws, they can apply 1,000 pounds of pressure with their jaw.
There you go.
So there you go. So some parrots can, in fact, snap a broomstick.
Yes.
Or your hand or whatever.
But they're hiding out in Rick Emerson's garage in the center block.
Thanks so much. I appreciate
that. We're all good.
Thanks. Now, Rick Emerson respects nature. That's the thing. That's why I don't give it a second chance. That's when I see it, I try to kill it the first time. Yeah. We've come to a sort of detente with the spiders around our house, the non-black widow spiders. But it's an uneasy truce that we have with the spiders where we now let them. The thing is that we have – I meant to take a picture of this last year. I think I only took a picture of that one spider that was like the size of a half dollar or something. But spiders, we let them sort of string webs and fill our garden with their webs, and just sort of hang out there. But there's two conditions to that. One is they're not allowed to get past the porch. The porch is the sort of dividing line. If there's a web on the porch or near the porch or anywhere where I'm going to like walk into it as I'm leaving the house, then they get the hose.
Yeah.
as long as they're in the garden, they can stay there. But that is only because of point number two, which is that they keep other insects from getting near the house.
So they're like they're like your house's bouncer for the insect world.
It's like, you know what it is? It's like how the Cullens it's like how Jacob and Edward strike they strike a temporary truce in the Twilight films to battle the Volturi. Do you hear a noise?
Yes, I hear.
It's the sound of your masculinity sliding, slinking away.
The spiders are here.
I was waiting for a spider with a jackhammer to fall through the roof like River Phoenix. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
I want to take a moment.
That's inside the room.
You're reading it right.
I don't have the actual details in front of you, but I did want to warn people in the fine city of Portland that the naked bike ride is tomorrow. And
now that must be the second one because there was one last weekend.
I don't know if that was an official naked bike ride or just people riding their bikes naked. Okay. I really don't know. But the official Naked Bike Ride is this weekend. And I would like to read the description of this event by Mr. Kurt Weber his Facebook thing, where he says, "Listen, I'm for people cycling, and generally I'm for nudity, but please, for the love of Zod, no. It's like Mapplethorpe meets Lovecraft. All fur and spokes and things you didn't know could exist on a human, and bike seats crammed into pimpled trenches, all snaking through unsuspecting neighborhoods like a smelly caterpillar on skates."
Yeah, I was having lunch with Laura and my mom last weekend. Was it here that I was talking about my mom going to Vegas?
Yeah, I think so.
And the whole thing. It might have been with Sarah and Greg. I think I mentioned it here. But my mom has become much more liberal in her old age. She's turned into this wholly different person. And what she once would have been horrified by, or I think would have construed as some sort of like the seventh seal having been broken or Satan being loosed on the earth, she now finds really sort of fascinating and great. So we're there at the food cart pod up on Belmont and like 52nd, right by Movie Madness or whatever. And we're there at having there's this place that has the best pork belly sandwiches. I got to tell you, it's like pork belly and some kind of like an Asiago. Is that a cheese?
Yeah.
And then an egg and then some other kind of just like handfuls of just like deep fried pork bits just sort of thrown on top of it. And then they have those dirty fries, which are awesome. Anyway, so we're all there having lunch. And then all of a sudden we hear kind of a woo. And we look over, and then there's the whole naked bike ride thing happening, like going right down Belmont. So that must have been a sort of like bootleg naked bike ride. It must have been like maybe they were sort of it was like an opening, like a season opener. Like it was like an exhibition ride.
A scrimmage ride.
Exactly. Yeah. Like it wasn't really official. It wasn't sanctioned.
No.
Does it happen everywhere in the world like at the same time on the same day?
I don't know.
Because they have that in England.
I grew up in Pennsylvania, and we never had any kind of a naked bike ride. I don't know if we just had more shame where I grew up or just the humidity was too much in the summertime. But no. When I heard about the first time I experienced a naked bike ride was with Dan Bozick. He and I were we were about to cross, I think it was like the Steel Bridge.
Oh, you observed it?
Yeah. Okay. And it kind of like there came this mass of naked people, and like, we both were stopped and dumbstruck for about 5 seconds, and then eventually I looked at him like, "Did I just see?" He's like, "Yes, you did." And then we just continued on, like, everything's fine. It's Portland. What are you going to do?
Let's never speak of it.
I guess, yes, it's an international thing. It's the world naked bike ride to, make people realize we have bikes and to deliver a vision of a cleaner, safer, body positive world.
Who cares? Also, that's stupid. I will say, but here's the thing. Normally, the people who are engaged in any sort of clothing optional activity I just hirsute and awful. But I will say that whoever it was, the introductory or the offshoot bike ride, the gorilla bike ride that happened last weekend, I will say the very last person in the procession was a rather attractive young lady who I suspect she may have been a ringer though, but they may have. It's like those chicks you see in personals ads that are obviously fake that the newspaper has just put there as some sort of like a just some sort of a bait to get you in. I think she may have been there just to make it, because otherwise then it's just a whole lot of a lot of unpleasant bouncing and back hair and bad.
Well, naked pantsless hippies. I don't want to see.
It's like, okay,
hippies.
I'm all for, like, if you want to be creative or silly or whatever in public, and that includes being naked, totally fine. My issue comes in when you're on a vehicle and you have next to no protection. Because I see a lot of people, no helmets, no elbow pads. But even if you are wearing those aren't the areas of interest should you fall off that bike at even like a low rate of speed.
Well, and here's... You know,
road rash happens.
And here's a question that I have. And Dom, maybe you can speak to this. I mean, theoretically, I'm not saying you're a nude bicyclist. But no. I'm saying if you're a woman without any clothing on and you're riding on your regular bicycle seat.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
I know it. I know
so how does that? How is it? How does the log not enter the sawmill?
Well, for one thing,
I had nothing else. I didn't know what else.
Well, you're perched atop that wedge. You are not like the pointy part is going for your perched. My issue would be just with
you know what I'm saying
with sweatiness and general squishiness. And
well,
also,
that's why you get like a Winco bag and just kind of wrap the seat up real quick, kind of like a Gallagher show.
You'd want to like wrap it in like terry cloth or something, wouldn't you? Because otherwise, I mean, if you've ever worn shorts and got up off a vinyl seat, you know, that's just the backs of your legs.
Yeah.
You know, I see these guys, you know, with their junk sort of just wobbling about on these leather bike seats, and I just go, that's going to be unpleasant later when you dismount.
That's why the bar for guys' bikes is so much higher, so that the junk can kind of just sort of hang on either side of it, like a beanbag chair on a laundry line, just kind of like anchor it in either way.
I had like a man balancing two paint cans on the end of a broomstick.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Here's Don Taylor.
All right. Three caskets are being returned to their final resting place in Yazoo, Mississippi, after floodwaters pushed them out of their graves. The Bethel Missionary Baptist Church Cemetery was completely covered in water last May, sending three caskets out of the ground. Yazoo County Coroner Ricky Shivers said, "There's 2.5 feet of water over the cemetery. The top of the headstones were the only thing showing." A month has passed, and church members said the water is receding, and they are now able to put the caskets back where they belong. After spending almost a month in a refrigerated truck at a county facility, the caskets were returned to their graves this week. The church deacon, Greg Giles, said, "We had to let the graves dry out because once the water got out of the cemetery, you still have a 6-foot hole full of water. So those had to dry out. Then you could go in and dig and put the vaults back." Giles said family members have handled the situation well. They understood it was something that we could not control, and they were great about it.
Here's the thing. Cemetery water is so much worse than garbage juice. I mean,
really?
That garbage juice is the worst liquid on earth, but cemetery water, I would say, is even more awful than that. Somebody's asking for clarification when you were talking about the nude male positioning on a bicycle, you were referencing the bike bar.
Yeah, the bar that kind of like just below the seat, you know, the one that
the guy's asking
across.
Exactly how large your sack is.
Yeah, apparently Jim hangs over and past the front of the seat and down and like sort of drapes across the bar
into the saddlebags.
That's how big he is.
They hang low. They wiggle to and fro. I can tie them in a knot or tie them in a bow. I can even throw them over my shoulder like a Continental Soldier. Yes, they hang low.
Okay.
Clarification?
No, I think we're all good.
Okay.
And of course, somebody has noted that nudity is in fact not illegal in Portland, which is a thing that we clarified a few years ago. Actually, that because we didn't know if that was the case or not, and we actually got somebody from the police department to come on and to clarify.
Officer Nudeman.
That nudity is in fact public nudity is legal in Portland if it is not being done for the purposes of sexual arousal or gratification.
I first noticed, I wasn't aware of that when I first moved here, and I think it was the very first summer I lived here. I don't know if it's still there or not. There was a McDonald's on Burnside around like 20th or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's there.
And I was stopped at a light right there, and there were these two nubile young ladies just sort of sitting on the steps of the McDonald's right on Burnside with their shirts off, just enjoying the sun. And I was like, that's something you don't see in Los Angeles. That's new.
Probably not in Los Angeles. No. No. Elsewhere in California, maybe, but not in L.A.
And I just thought to myself, Portland.
And you're talking about L.A. You're talking about a city with a finely developed and honed sense of shame. That would be L.A.
Yes.
All right,
we like boobs in L.A., don't get me wrong, but they have to be, enhanced, augmented, and then, covered just enough.
Right.
So you're just seeing them push threateningly against fabric. But
out and out, no.
But no, you're not allowed to actually look straight at them. It'll blind you.
The Ark of the Covenant.
Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do our clown watch.
Here's your clown watch for Friday right out there in the Rick Emerson radio program.
Hungary is the latest nation in Europe to stage rallies against proposed austerity measures and budget cuts. Over the past week, demonstrators have taken to the streets in Greece, Spain, and Belarus to voice their revulsion with the nation's economic leadership. More than 10,000 people marched Thursday in Budapest. The protest, organized by the nation's largest trade union, was a response to Prime Minister Viktor Orban's plan to cut pension benefits. Dubbed the Clown Revolution, thousands of protesters in Budapest marched from Parliament to the presidential palace in clown costumes and makeup. Earlier, President Orban said that he would send his Secretary of Clown Affairs to deal with the upset citizens.
That's awesome.
A tiny car with tinted windows pulls up.
Unlike other rallies in Europe, police officers in Hungary are on the side of the protesters. Orban's cut has a huge effect on public workers, such as police, firefighters, and armed forces. Public sector and high-risk workers have been allowed to retire at 57 or earlier if injured since the 1960s, but the government says it will no longer pay out pensions to anyone below the general retirement age of 65. Once again, thousands of protesters in Budapest marched from Parliament to the presidential palace dressed as clowns.
But back at this business of there being a Secretary of Clown Affairs.
Yes, the president said he would send his Secretary of Clown Affairs to talk to them.
I wonder if that's a newly created position or if they're just, are they an especially forward-thinking country? Or they just want to have every eventuality covered?
It's like Rob Corddry from Children's Hospital just shows up in the suit.
Jesus. Yes, there we go. You said he would send his Secretary of Clown Affairs to deal with upset citizens. So let me ask you this. If that was a position that was available to you, Don, would you take that or would you eschew that position?
Wow. I would be the wrong person to hire for it because I hate clowns. So
they need a self-loathing clown this position.
I think you need somebody who can see both sides of an issue. If you're going to be negotiating with clowns, you can't really have somebody in that position who would just always be anti-clown.
Oh, see, so you wouldn't be I was thinking you'd be like that porn czar they have in Utah or had, who was quite literally a 40-year-old virgin who was in charge with, who was tasked with enforcing all their porn laws. So I thought that might be your thing, to keep the clowns in their place.
Well, I could do that too. It would depend on the point of the job. If the job was keep the clowns down, then I would be all for
that. Give them their own
woman, man. Come around. Keep them clowns down.
You wouldn't. I mean, you'd give them their own section of town where they could live.
I don't know.
First, that section would be on fire 24 hours a day.
First, we're outlawing grease paint and those long, skinny balloons.
No. You can only have grease paint if you have a government-owned passive marijuana. You can only have but those are never allowed. So therefore, it's technically it's legal, but it's not legal.
And I'm sorry, your shoes look a little bit suspiciously large, sir.
This is clown profiling.
They're all going to have to go in and they're all going to have to wear a big red nose on their lapel. All right, there's your clown watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Yeah.
We could take that. There's so many dark. Yeah.
Worst concentration camp ever.
Or best. I don't know.
Really, I mean, it depends.
The most cheerful concentration camp.
Stop.
It's Laughwitz.
Wow.
Attention, Sarah Silverman. We just came up with the name of your next comedy special.
That's fantastic. All right. Well, we should take a break here. We'll come back on the other side. By the way, I want to say that if you're enjoying this humor, you can thank the fine folks at Squires Electric. What was the name? Obesius?
Obesius.
That's genius.
Yes.
That really is wonderful. That is just, that's the thing. You know, here's the thing that I'm no good at. I'm no good at coining. I can never come up with names or phrases or like, I can never title anything like bits or contests. I'm terrible at naming things. So I'm always very, very, I'm admiring of and envious of people who are able to name things or come up with titles for things.
I do
so
it
well
almost
like
compulsively. Like I'll do it for like just for my own amusement for things that will never ever be used. You know, and I'll just if something passes my view, I just sort of like throw something at it or acronyms too. I don't know. It might be some kind of OCD.
See, I can't do that. See, that's the thing. Like I can come up with concepts or ideas. I mean, I come up, you know, all the time, but I am terrible at titling anything, especially if it has to be clever in any way. Which I think is related to my inability to speak in sound bites, you know, which is related to my inability to hold any sort of like a music radio job because I can never. I have problem with concision in terms of my thought process. So
nice word.
In any event, the Rick Emerson Radio program brought to you today by Squires Electric. Find out more about them at squireselectric.com. By the way, do you know they're putting motion sensors for all the lights in this building here?
No, I didn't.
Including
not know.
In the whiz room in the bathroom. So
we
when you go
one
there,
at our store, which is really cool, because every time I walk in there, I act like it's Demolition Man. I'm like, illuminate. And
yeah,
the lights come on.
No, so there's going to be one in the kitchen now. So if you walk into the kitchen, the lights go on. You leave the kitchen, the lights go off. And then they're going to be doing it in the. Well, actually, so Joe Squires asked me. He's like, "Do you guys need some sort of a motion sensor for the light in the bathroom?" And I he was asking me if the lights were left on a lot in the bathroom as opposed to being left on in the kitchen. And anyway. I had some long story I was going to tell here that had to do with urine. It doesn't really matter. The point is, good enough to wire the studios of the Emerson News Network, good enough for your home or your business, and not just the studio, not just the broadband, not just the actual electrical wiring, but now the actual motion sensing equipment going to be done too. They can do it right. They can do it right the first time. They're going to do it at an economical price for you. It means they're going to give you an estimate up front so you know about what you're going to pay and that you're going to pay, you're going to pay less in the long run anyway because it's going to be done right the first time, so you're not going to have, some guy come in, see what didn't get installed properly, what didn't get upgraded correctly, what didn't get put in the right way. You can contact them at SquiresElectric.com or Facebook.com/SquiresElectric, 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. We should totally do, while he's putting in the motion sensor for the lights, we should totally have him put in, hook the motion sensor to some sort of like a, just like some speakers where like it can greet you when you walk in, like mother or something where it just,
welcome to the bathroom, Rick.
Totally. Or like Hal or something where it just, greetings, may your bowel movement be satisfying and without incident.
Thank you for your waste.
we need to get on him about one of those Dyson hand dryers.
Totally. Oh, my God. I bet.
The Air Blade or whatever it is.
The Air Blade. The Dyson. Yeah. Have you used it?
I have.
The Dyson Air Blade is awesome.
It took my fingerprints off about an hour and a half.
That
it's
thing
awesome.
Is fantastic. Okay, here's why he might actually go for that. Because, because there's that wastebasket in the bathroom here, which is tiny. And it's tiny because it matches. They wanted a wastebasket which matched the decor, and I understand that. But the only wastebasket they could find that matched the decor was, it's like a shot glass, basically. And so it fills up with paper towels. Really, because you can't flush those, or you're not supposed to. Yeah. So it fills up really quickly. And the thing is, the trash guy only comes once a week. And so that paper towel thing, and by the way, it ends up being Rick Emerson who takes care of that because I'm anal retentive about this stuff. So the trash thing, and it's not like it's full of, like, anything that's too horribly vile. I mean, it's used paper towels, which is kind of gross, but it's not like
spent needles and
Band-aids. See, it's not like bio waste or something. But because I cannot stand to see a trash bin overflowing, I am always the guy who ends up going, pressing it down or taking it into the kitchen and dumping it. So it ends up being on me because nobody else does it. That is the thing with, like, you just don't clean your room because your mom will eventually buckle in and do it. I am the mom in this case. By the way, I'm also the only one who empties the trash in this studio. So. But the Air Blade would actually solve the problem. Plus, yeah. It's awesome. That's the thing is, it's neat.
Yeah, and it, the paper towel, more expensive because you constantly have to have refills for it.
Totally.
As well as, sometimes you're out of stock of it or you have to wait for the guy with the key to come in and to fix it. With this, all you need is air and you're good to go.
Okay, we should totally look into how much one of those costs. That's fantastic. All right, Squires Electric can be reached at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/SquiresElectric or 503-252-1609. We are back here around the corner with Big Jim Willig and Humor Me Comedy 101. Stay right there. The Rick Emerson Show continues next. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
The Rick Emerson Radio Program. All right, by the way, I do have that top five put together.
Okay.
It's the top five father songs that I was able to find already sitting on my computer for some reason. There you go. It's the top five father songs to which I had immediate access without doing any actual work.
And then I have a father song.
Okay, so I want to hear this song, though, because you referenced this as being from a Warner Brothers cartoon,
right,
with the three bears. And I remember the cartoon, I just don't remember the song.
The cartoon was A Bear for Punishment. It was the third of the three Chuck Jones Three Bears cartoons. It was Father Bear's either birthday or Father's Day. I can't remember what it was. Apparently, it was inspired by Chuck Jones himself. His 6-year-old daughter was insisting that she was going to fix him breakfast, and when he said, "Dear God, why?" and his wife said, "Because it's Father's Day." And so it's this entire cartoon in which Baby Bear is trying to, he tries to make dinner, and of course it ends up breakfast and ends up all over Father Bear. And he goes to fill his pipe for him, but of course he puts gunpowder in it and explodes his head. And so all these horrible, horrible things happen. And then it culminates with them putting on a show for Father Bear, in which they make him sit in a chair and watch a little show. Whoops.
Father's Day poem, Henry.
My Paw by Junior Bear, age 7 1/2. My Paw. When the nasty old boogeyman fills me with fears, and my little old pinafore is all wet with tears, and my cute little pug nose is all red from crying, who is it that saves me and keeps me from dying? My Paw! when my little pink cheeks are pale with fright? Who is it that lifts me and holds me tight and says, there, there, little man, everything is all right? My paw.
I don't remember any of this. I remember the father bear sitting in the chair, but that's the extent of it. Another mom. Mom is doing a soft shoe routine. Warner Brothers cartoons are weird. Are they dressed as like Civil War soldiers or something?
Now they're
dipping the father in a barrel of flour.
Right.
And now they've dressed him up as the Statue of Liberty.
Of course.
There's something really weird going on in a lot of old Warner Brothers cartoons.
And Ma's dressed as George Washington, and Baby Bear's dressed as Lincoln. And now the fireworks and the flags and the things.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Well, when you got a lot of deadlines to
seriously
to hit, and you're sleep deprived and probably a little drunk,
I think that must be it with a lot of like those classic cartoons, like the Warner Brothers cartoons, which are so bizarre that it must be that they just we gotta have something by Friday, and so it's like the most insane idea suddenly occurs to you as just being a thing that makes a lot of sense.
Maybe hiring Salvador Dali as our creative consultant wasn't a good idea,
seriously,
or the best idea ever.
So bizarre. All right, let's see. Let's do one more visit to the news desk. Then we'll have another installment of Humor Comedy 101 with Big Jim Willig. And then we'll have today's topic. Because this weekend is Father's Day, right?
That is correct.
Okay, so we'll have this sort of hastily put together and somewhat shoddy top five of the top five father songs that were sitting kind of right in front of me.
Reminiscent of like every Father's Day gift ever.
Seriously. do you have something that beeps or blinks or something? All right, great. That's wonderful.
And now, from
but
the
Planters Salted Nuts. Do you have those? The dry roasted kind?
Dawn Taylor.
Images on a Walgreens drugstore surveillance camera recording may help law enforcement identify two Florida suspects who were confronted by a machete-wielding man during a home invasion robbery in Palm Bay. The incident was the latest of several kick-in-the-door home burglaries in Palm Bay in the past 2 months, and the break-ins may be connected. So far, the only arrest has been of a Vero Beach youth who sought treatment for cut wounds. He is being held in the Brevard County Detention Center. Mac told hospital staff he was severely cut by a lawnmower blade, but Palm Beach Bay Police had notified all nearby hospitals to be on the lookout of someone with Mac's description. Apparently, he had broken into the house and then fled the crime scene in a vehicle described as a black Chevrolet Cavalier after the homeowner defended himself with a machete. The resident who was confronted with home invasion robbers frantically described fending off the men with the machete during his 911 call, during which he said he was at home alone around 9 a.m. He heard a loud banging on his front door. There were two males, one with a gun. In his stairway on the 911 call, he said, oh, my God, two guys broke into my house. I had to chop one of them up.
Jesus.
I don't know them. I was upstairs and I heard a noise and I grabbed my machete. I just started chopping at both of them all the way down the steps. There's blood everywhere.
Good God almighty.
The victim, who sobbed as he described the incident to the dispatcher, also remained focused enough to snap a picture of the getaway card with his cell phone. Oh, my goodness, he said repeatedly. And the dispatcher...
I framed the shot really well.
Dispatcher was heard telling him, it's okay, over and over again.
I understand that they're just trying to calm the guy down, but no, it's not okay. I mean, you don't want to be taken advantage of, but who just has a machete just sitting at the ready, just like, well, I mean, I've never had to use it, thank God. for that night.
All right. On that deeply disturbing note, by the way, somebody wants to know that the Papa Bear is the most physically abusive bastard.
Yeah.
In those Warner Brothers cartoons.
Yeah, he really is.
He really is. Well, you know, a lot of those cartoons contain things that were, I think, a little untoward, and we just didn't recognize at the time, or it just fit into the societal framework as it then existed.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that if you have a child who's basically developmentally challenged in the size of Bull Shannon from Night Court and a mom who's had... And a mom's who has had at least three strokes a day for the past 5 years.
And who is a sex fiend, by the way, because I think there's something where Bugs Bunny ends up living with the three bears and the mom keeps doing that thing of like, oh, aren't you adorable? And the mom keeps trying to like get it on with Bugs Bunny. They do some Goldilocks thing, I think, where Bugs is wandering through the woods and he goes, too hot, too cold, just right. And then the mama bear comes home and the father bear, of course, wants to kill him and get rid of him and whatever. And then the mama bear, though, like wants to, won't let him because she has the hots for Bugs Bunny. It's all very weird. And don't a lot of the Warner Brothers cartoons have like a big retarded kid?
More than likely,
like,
yeah.
There's what's his name? There's the stork.
Well,
or
yeah.
The
vulture.
The vulture.
Nope.
Yeah, that totally him. Yeah. So.
Well, he's just kind of more like a stupid hillbilly, really.
No, he's retarded. I think he's
because he was like
because his parents aren't like that. Yeah. And again, the dad who clearly hates him for being retarded.
And
has anybody talked to Chuck Jones's dad and see what the other brothers were like?
And then there's the kangaroo kid. Who Sylvester thinks is a giant mouse.
It's a mouse, right.
Yeah.
And he's, again, kind of a weird, oversized child.
Oh, and then also, here's another character who's not retarded as such, but it's the brainiac kid of the chicken that is always trying to hook up a Foghorn Leghorn. She's like the spinster. And it's like the little kid with the glasses on, and he's like some genius kid. And it's like,
I'm a chicken hawk.
Right. No. You're thinking of
chicken hawk. The
kid with huge glasses and he was carrying a book and he had a beanie on. And he was like a brainiac and he had like this spinster mom, I guess.
Yes, it's his mom.
And she was always the one with the girl. She had her girlfriends who were like, ooh, a man, and it was,
Well, again, though, they are chickens and there's only one rooster and they are all kind of in competition for the one guy.
That's true.
Which is part of, I believe, why Foghorn Leghorn has the overdeveloped ego that he does.
All right.
Not that I've spent a lot of time thinking about
deep.
This, mind you.
It's like a college thesis right there.
I hadn't really actually thought about that he was actually the cock of the walk, so to speak.
Exactly.
That he was the only male around.
Yeah, there's several really cartoons that are like, don't worry about it, ladies. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of this. You stay right here, you pretty young things. Yeah.
It surprises me that somebody hasn't done some sort of a dissertation or a thesis using Warner Brothers cartoons to examine like weird sociosexual issues. Because there's, I mean, and people have made jokes about this a lot, but there's like, there is that whole thing of like Bugs Bunny and his weird sort of cross-dressing thing, which is only weird in the sense that for the time, which is like 50 years ago, it was just the thing he did, and no one ever thought. I mean, and maybe rules are different for cartoons, and also drag was even then was an accepted form of comedy for male comics. But I mean, it's sort of odd when you think about it, because he didn't just dress up in drag; he was like overtly flirtatious and like romantic when in drag.
Yeah, he made out with Elmer Fudd on at least a half a dozen occasions that I can
That's
remember.
True, and he was giving him the big. Thing, the big long kiss that was like the weird pulse, the smack kiss. Yeah. That's weird.
Yeah.
Okay, well, fine.
I'm going to call my sponsor real quick.
All right. And, oh, by the way, and somebody notes that that's why Foghorn would get crazy when that Rhode Island Red guy would show up, because he was threatening to... He was threatening to impregnate before, the ladies before Foghorn could see to that. All right, let's never talk about this again. Here's our good friend, Mr. Big Jim Willie, with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101, ladies and gentlefolk.
Thank you very much, Mr. Emerson. Well, it is Father's Day weekend, so I figured I'd pick somebody who was like a mascot for dads. You know, a father plays many roles, from teacher to role model, medic to disciplinarian, and at times, he is our first guide in a comedy. Whether you're laughing with him as he tells you your first dirty joke, wrecked him, damn near killed him, or laughing at him as he curses the digestive habits of the neighbor's chihuahua. At the end of the day, all any dad wants is a cold beer, a hot steak, and a couch on which to sit as he scratches his beard. Well, for all papas out there, this one's for you. Your host is Ed O'Neill.
We go west, past the cheese factories where the air is fresh. The sky is big, and a man can still kill his dinner with his car.
Most people remember Ed as Polk High high school football legend turned underrated husband and all-around whipping post, Al Bundy.
Now I am going to my boss's mountain cabin to fish and drink and fish, and sometimes even fish and drink and fish. For 1 week, I'm going to pretend that I'm actually alive.
Mr. O'Neill has recently returned to TV family life, playing the part of Jay Pritchett on ABC's Modern Family. Mr. Pritchett is your average old-fashioned guy who studies Brazilian jiu-jitsu with a second wife who's half his age, and his oldest son is in a committed gay relationship.
What do I know? I mean, it's not like I wrote the book on fatherhood. Been trying all my life to get it right. I'm still screwing up. Right, Manny?
I wrote a song about it in the car.
Of course you did.
But by far my favorite father figure Ed has ever played was the blue-collar, demented man-child in a tiny John Hughes holiday movie simply called Dutch.
What do you like to do for fun? Oh, you like to wiggle and grunge? Me too.
This isn't working out. We're not masters of the highway. We were robbed by homebound hookers.
Only because you fell asleep and I got excited.
You did?
Not everyone had the privilege of having a father willing to put up with a metric poop ton of our abuse and still be cool enough to buy us illegal fireworks and raunchy playing cards. But thanks to Mr. Ed, we could imagine we did, if only for a brief period of time. With that, I turn things over to the other troubled teens in the studio with me at this time. Rick, let's rock. Emerson and Don, woo Bundy Taylor. Your thoughts on Father of the Year, Ed O'Neill.
I have to say that I hadn't thought about the movie Dutch until this moment, just
really?
Now. Yeah, I've seen it, but I hadn't thought about it for a long, long time. And Dutch is sort of, I don't know that it's the definition of a cult film, but it is very much a cult film because it was critically reviled. I don't know that it did all that well.
I don't think so.
But everybody I know, especially guys, it must be said, you know, has seen that movie many times and will watch it if it happens to be on, like you're flipping by USA Today or USA Today, yeah, USA or TNT or whatever, and mm-hmm. it happens to be there, you'll watch it.
Yeah.
You know, if it happens to be on cable in the middle of the day or something. Dutch, and I guess I had sort of forgotten that it was a John Hughes film as
yeah.
well. I remember that.
He didn't direct it, but he did produce it, as he did a bunch of other films that are kind of attributed to him.
It was directed by the Paul Hogan guy, the guy that did Crocodile Dundee, whatever that guy's name was.
Okay.
Because that was one of the ways that they billed it at the time. It was for the director of Crocodile Dundee. And it had what's
like,
her
wait,
name?
Wait, wait, wait. No. This one's really good. Where are you going?
And it had the chick that played Dottie in Pee-wee's Big Adventure in it. Elizabeth Daly is in that as well.
Okay.
But I remember liking it. I have to say that I honestly don't remember that much about
yeah.
it. But that's the thing that jumps out for me here is that, and here's the thing about Ed O'Neill, is that Ed O'Neill, not just because of the Al Bundy thing, but I think in a lot of his roles, and I seem to remember that him being this way in Dutch as well, and I don't know a lot about Modern Family, but what I've seen of Modern Family is Ed O'Neill is one of those guys who does actually seem like he could be your real dad.
Yeah.
Even in obviously something that is a stereotype and over the top and is painted with primary colors like Married with Children, he didn't seem like a guy that was that far removed from like either your own dad or like, you know, like the drunken miscreant father of like one of your friends growing up. He seemed like he was just a couple of shades past reality.
Yeah, the thing that I always loved about Dutch was he kind of played both sides of the fence. He was the father that you always wanted to have, but at the same time he was the role model that you wanted to be when you became a father. You know, like you'd still be cool enough to, you know, like buy fireworks at a gas station for the kid, and then like, you know, he's like, well, where are we gonna go? So he's like, well, we'll drive down the road, we'll pull off, we'll find some secluded spot, we'll set them off, don't worry, you're thinking too much about this. So it's like, you know, I always thought, like, when I become a dad, I want to be like Ed O'Neill, and at the same time be like, you know, I kind of wish that he was the one that I had to kind of like teach me how to be when I was a kid. And the great thing about this is he isn't technically the father. At the very end, he makes this very good point with the guy who played his dad is like Shooter McGavin from one of those Adam Sandler movies, the golfing one. But basically, this jerk that plays his father, who sort of uses his son as a bargaining chip to screw over the life of his ex-wife. Ed kind of pulls him aside and he's kind of setting him straight. He's like, you know, I'm going to do my best to look out for Doyle because he's a good kid. That's what I figured out. You know, I'm never going to be his dad. That's your job. And kind of puts it to him. He's just like, I'm not going to come in here and try and take over your job, even though I could do it in a heartbeat and you know it. but you're going to be his dad no matter what. And then he punches him in the face with a ring on, and it's just, oh, it's that's awesome.
Well, he's sort of, in a way, he's kind of a cousin to Uncle Buck.
Yes.
Again, because we talked about this last week with John Kennedy, the Buck seems like a guy who could, if you squint a little bit, could be an actual uncle of yours.
Yeah.
You don't quite ever have an uncle that's just, you know, that's that cool. Just like you don't ever have, you don't ever have Ed O'Neill as your dad in any of his, in any of his incarnations. But you kind of could. It wouldn't take that much sort of jiggering of your life around to have that be the case. Don Taylor?
He's one of those actors that I just have always assumed on some level that he must have a much more serious background than he actually does. He always has struck me as someone that you wouldn't at all be surprised to find out that he had this extensive theater background.
Yeah.
Because he has such a solid grasp of just craft. Also, he had small parts in two Mammoth films. I mean, he was in Spartan and he was in Red Belt.
Yes.
And so you think, well, maybe Mammoth knew him from the theater. No, he's a guy who has always just plugged along in television.
Yeah.
And so he brings this air of overqualification to these roles. And on Modern Family, which is very, very good and very, very funny.
Now,
and
I thought you disliked Modern Family.
No, I love Modern Family.
Am I thinking of a similar show that you dislike? Is there something like Modern Family on that you don't care for? You care if you like Parenthood, though.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe not. Maybe I'm confusing with somebody
else.
No,
as sitcoms go, Modern Family, I think I may have quibbled a little bit that I think that the faux documentary, handy cam premise has gotten way old, and they use it in Modern Family for no good reason because it's,
it can stand on its own.
Yeah, but Ed O'Neill is a large part of why that show is so good.
Absolutely,
because he is both absolutely hilarious and utterly, utterly believable as the father of this family, and so but also just being this great older dad. Now, in Married with Children, he was sort of the middle-aged dad with the young kids, mm-hmm. Teenage-ish kids. Now he's like the older dad having to deal with the grown-up kids. And he does that whole just grumpy, crusty, oh, dear God, why? I just want to go fishing kind of thing. So very, very well.
Yeah, and he's got both in Modern Family. He's got his oldest son, like I said, is in the committed gay relationship where they end up adopting a kid. But he's also got the wife that's like a third his age, and people are constantly mistaking him for her father. Yeah.
And
she's
then
got
her
kids.
Son, her son, Manny,
yeah.
who was also just completely hilarious, and watching the interaction between Ed O'Neill and this young Colombian boy who just sits, who drinks espresso and plays exotic instruments and is concerned about matching his ties to his shirts.
So maybe that's a program that I should be watching because I sort of avoided it.
No, it's very funny.
Okay,
it's all right. Very, very funny.
Yeah, and it's it's kind of like a conglomeration of like a bunch of different families and different levels of generations. So it doesn't get kind of tiresome. Like, okay, you know what you get in the first episode is what you're always going to have. There's always like a hodgepodge and sort of like a drifting around the different branches of the trees.
So well, and they were also really smart to have the whole premise being these different layers of the family, the father and then his young wife with her kid. So he's having to interact with another young child that he's raised up, but the two adult kids, one the gay couple who have a baby, then his daughter and her husband, and then she has a teenage daughter, and two years. And so it's like I think there is something within the show that pretty much everyone can relate to.
Yeah.
And then also, as well as anyone who has a family can relate to the kind of, interactions of the family. But he is the anchor on that show entirely. I think if you had if you'd cast that role poorly, it would have really sunk the whole premise.
I was looking at his filmography here, and so, yeah, in addition to being in Red Belt and Spartan, he was actually in a third Mammoth film. He was in The Spanish Prisoner.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And so there must be something there, that everybody does see that he has, he has a solid acting ability. And it also is worth noting that, for a lot of people, and this is true for him and Katie Sagal both, and I guess Christina Applegate, that you know, a show like Married with Children is it, that is like the definition of a show that can just trap you in amber if you're not careful, if you don't really know how to act. That is a show where you are like Peg Bundy forever. And you know the fact that those three, especially Ed O'Neill and Katie Sagal, have been able to sort of break out of that and play something else is a testament not just to the industry for seeing beyond that, but to the fact that they actually have the talent commensurate, you know, with the opportunities that they were given after that, because that is a show that lends itself to stereotyping and to limiting, you know, and to typecasting easily, very easily.
And it broke the age-old rule, which was whenever you add what's his name,
Ted McGinley.
Whenever you add Ted McGinley to his show, that's the sign of death. That okay, you've got maybe a season two at the outside with Ted McGinley on your cast, because you know he is like a cancer that will attach himself to your show and eventually bring you
down. McGinley ruins all that he touches, except for Married with Children.
Yeah, and they were just like, nope, sorry, you're not going to touch this one. What I loved about Married with Children was when I was growing up, all my friends, they had the T-shirt that said like I dated Kelly Bundy, mm-hmm. and Kelly Bundy fan club T-shirts. I was always a fan of Kelly Sagal. I always thought that she was even sexier than Christina Applegate because she was a little too slutty and too stupid, which, you know, in real life you find out that Christina Applegate, member of Mensa, like genius.
Well, and Katie Sagal had that whole, you know, the thing about Peg Bundy is that you know, she was hot.
Yeah.
But then also she was hot and she wasn't dumb.
No.
That was the other great thing they did with both of those characters. The thing with Al Bundy and Peg Bundy both is that neither of them were dumb as such.
No.
You know, they were trashy. And so their knowledge was sort of tainted around the edges by this sort of, you know, by the fact that they were just rubes, you know, that they were white trash, but that they weren't stupid people.
Yeah.
You know, and in fact, grading on some sort of a curve, they were actually really, really bright and also really quick and really sharp. And, you know, and that show, Married with Children, is such a fascinating show because it's a show that shouldn't have worked. I mean, it should just be so broadly written and so just done in such huge, broad strokes that it should actually just fall apart.
Yeah.
But it was like they just so embraced it. They just grabbed it and they just decided just to take it as far as they possibly could.
Yeah.
You know, but again, but I think maybe one of the really brilliant moves behind that show was actually having a show about a low-rent, trashy family, but then to some degree filling it with people who could really... Because Ted McGinley's no slouch.
No.
And it's what's-her-name that plays Marcy, who has gone on to do a few things over the years. She was actually really good as well, and I've seen her. She actually does a lot of... she's a spokesperson for a lot of gay rights groups now and a lot of animal rights groups.
She also went on to become a director. She's directed a lot of television.
So everybody on that show, possibly with the exception of what's-his-name, David Faustino, everybody on that show had a real solid basis and was really talented, which maybe is the only way that you can make material like that actually rise above itself. So,
but yeah, like I said, I always longed for Peg Bundy, but what stopped me was the fear of Al.
Totally.
Because, you know, for as much as he got flack from just about every direction, from his kids, from his wife, from the neighbors, from like strangers on the street, when it came time for Al to handle business, he did it in such almost like Bruce Campbellian style, thank you. That it was awesome. Usually whenever he was throwing out one of the many guys that Kelly was with, he'd always do the thing where he'd bash their face against something, but make it like, oop, I accidentally did that. I'm
right.
So sorry. But yeah, like I said, I always wanted Peg, but Al was the scary aspect of the background there. And yeah, he was quoted as saying he didn't expect the show to last 6 episodes, and then it went like 7-8 seasons long. And you know, it just for me, after a while, it kind of got a little old. But I know I could always go back to it, and whenever there was reruns of it, you'd hear that theme song start to play, and you'd be like, "Okay, I'll stick around for this."
Yeah, well, and I mean, in large because of the backlash that it got, that was one of the big blessings that Married with Children got, is that people there was such a huge. In fact, there was one woman, and I forget her name, but Christina Applegate has mentioned her several times. She said, "You know, like thank God for whoever this woman's name was," and it was that there was this one woman who started there was a woman named Terry Ricolta. She was was from Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, and she led a boycott against Married with Children in 1989, and it was on the cusp of being canceled. It was on the verge of being canceled.
That's
but
right.
When Terry Ricolta started campaigning against the show, that's when the show really, really picked up. And you know, it became an institution. That was one of those things that a certain slice of America, the same people who to some degree, it overlapped with Roseanne a lot, but it was an even more extreme version of Roseanne. And I think it really was embraced by people, A, who liked the show, and also were just sick of seeing things on television that bore no relation to any kind of reality.
Yeah.
And again, you know, it's not unlike John Candy from last week. Again, the other thing about Ed O'Neill, not just as Al Bundy, but maybe most distinctly as Al Bundy, he was that character, the alpha loser.
Yeah.
You know, where he's a shoe salesman. I mean, he's a shoe salesman whose children don't respect him, you know, whose wife doesn't respect him, won't put out for him. But it's like he still is like king of his domain.
Yeah.
You know, and doesn't hesitate to bring the, he keeps his pimp hand strong, yes, as they say.
And all he wants is like just a little bit of peace and quiet, just to kind of be left alone for a little bit, or maybe to go to the nudie bar, as when I posted that on my Facebook, I immediately got like four or five different people just like throwing up their hands like, yes, thank God. And this one person listed this huge dissertation song that Al sings in one of the episodes about the joys of going to the nudie bar, and you know how like the wife isn't there, and,
right,
you know, it's just epic. And about Al and Peg, what I liked was the fact that they would be, you know, they'd be at each other's throats and they'd be great, but they were even better when they were working together in concert against some other common foe. That's when both of like the just like both devils on both shoulders were just like, okay, there's no way they can fail at this point.
Right. What was the deal with Marcy's first husband? Where did he go on the show?
Steve.
What happened with him?
He ended up just running off. Remember, he came back briefly with a beard.
Did he run away with some other chick? Is that the deal?
I think because they kind of wrote him off because most people didn't kind of like him.
Right.
And then they brought in McGinley.
Because he was sort of the villain. Like, he was, yeah, Al's nemesis. And then...
No, he was actually...
He?
No, he was very much kind of like... he was under Marcy's thumb.
Wanted to be Al,
yeah,
perhaps?
Yeah, and kind
bit?
Of like... At first wanted to try and change Al.
Ah.
But then after a while kind of came along. But it was more like his hapless rube that would follow Al and kind of mostly like a Flanders aspect.
The Barney to his Fred.
Yeah, in a sense.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101, Mr. Big Jim Willig. For those that wish to see your comedic stylings in the flesh, where might they do so, Jim?
Coming up on Wednesday, June 22nd, I will be at the Barrel Room, which is at 135 Northwest 3rd Avenue here in sunny downtown Portland, Oregon. Show starts at 8 p.m. Or doors are at 8 p.m. Show should start promptly thereafterwards. It's me and a slew of other awesome comedians. Richard Bain will be in performance, as well as many others. So please come on down. The Barrel Room, Wednesday, June 22nd at 8 o'clock, 135 Northwest 3rd Ave.
And find out more about Big Jim Willig at BigJimWillig.com. That is BigJimWillig. BigJimWillig.com. This has been another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101.
Look what I found.
What have you found?
I found a machine that makes pancakes, an automatic pancake machine.
Okay, weren't you the one bitching about somebody being so lazy that they had to go and buy that, like, pancake batter in a spray can?
Yeah.
Okay.
But at the same time, though, it's like, hey, automatic pancake machine.
Well, you can admire... I can... No, don't be wrong. I embrace my own laziness. I admire anything that makes my life a little bit easier.
Granted, it's for food service, professional food service facilities. It's apparently the size of a microwave, and it can make, I believe, 180 medium pancakes an hour. One pancake every 18 seconds.
Really?
That is awesome.
So wait, so it can just churn them out. So this isn't like a thing where it's... These are real pancakes it's
These
making.
Are real pancakes. It has the pancake mix and the stuff are in the machine, and it makes batter, and then it deposits it onto these Teflon plates and then rolls it out on a little conveyor belt.
Can you just plug in, like, I would like 15, you know?
I think so, because there's, like, little buttons down the bottom. So I think
that's
you could say,
awesome.
I would like 20 pancakes. It goes, okay. Zickada, zickada, zickada.
Here we go, BCS. Breakfast. Let's put it in my trough.
What is the sound that it makes?
Tickada, tickada, tickada.
All right. Okay.
Scrump.
This is why I can't wear the... You know, the corset, because of the back boobs.
Because of the zickada, zickada, zickada.
Yes, because of the... That's why I have the glomping, is because of the zickada, zickada.
I think the Spice Girls sang about that. Oh, by the way, Thomas Gill said, I had the pancake machine in Chehalis. I don't know what that means.
I mean, did he have it?
Like, he said with a thousand-yard stare.
Biblically. But I mean, what do you mean you had it in Chehalis?
Did you? You were at a place that had it, and you ate the pancakes?
Oh, it was in his hotel.
That would make sense.
Like a self-serve kind of a thing, maybe?
Yeah,
you could go down and...
Because of the continental breakfast, you need to crank them out. You know,
yeah.
How many pancakes would you like? And he said, yes, I used it for breakfast.
Wow.
Hello, Don. How many? 15. Yes, 15 pancakes. And then just puts them out like a card shuffler. That's
awesome.
That would
be awesome. And then I go next to the bacon machine.
Just, on one side, there's the bacon. And the other side, just pigs marching to their delicious doom.
Okay. Let's see. Get ready to wrap this up with your top five for... How did my top five opener go? Oh, damn it. My top five opening theme has vanished. Hold on a second.
Do you have a list of these for me?
I do. I'll hand this to you in just one moment.
Okay.
I wonder if this is one of those things that I thought was a duplicate file that turned out to not be a duplicate file. And top five open. Hold on a second. It's right here. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, here is your top five for Father's Day weekend here on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
4, 3, 2, 1, fire!
Counting is wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy, I love to count, don't you?
These are the top five father-themed songs that I happen to have sitting around on my computer so that I did not need to expend any effort or energy whatsoever in any way, fashion, or form to find them. These are the top Father's Day songs I had within reach.
All right, Don Taylor? Our honorable mention is Wayne Newton.
Daddy, as I think is evidenced by the honorable mention.
Daddy, don't you walk so fast.
Yeah. It's okay to hate all these, by the way.
Okay. Love your father, hate the list.
Everybody now.
The love between the two of us was dying.
Wayne didn't sound too good.
I think Wayne's voice was still changing at the age of 30. He still sounded like Peggy Lee here. I hate this song.
Daddy, don't you walk so
fast. What a terrible song.
Yeah. Finally an anthem for deadbeat dads everywhere.
Dad, you're leaving me behind. Dad, come back. Ah, crap. As you just see a Packard speeding off in the distance. Daddy, don't dump me at the mall.
Daddy, sorry I made fun of your Fiero.
Daddy, God.
She had no way of knowing I was leaving home for good.
I don't even know what we're talking about now with this song. I have no idea. What is he even referring to?
Now it's somebody saying it to him. I think it's a hooker.
Why is his girlfriend saying, Daddy, don't you walk so fast? That, by the way, that made it difficult to do any song with Daddy in the title because they were all, like, sexy Daddy songs. None of them were, you know.
Daddy, don't you walk so fast?
Is this like the country music thing where the same chorus is used in three different contexts?
Yeah.
And at the end, it's like the last one is always about God somehow.
The ultimate father.
Turn back home right there and then. Try to start a new life with the mother of my child. I couldn't bear to hear those words again. She died.
See, so I guess something happens at the end and there's a thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's walking really fast. Maybe it's just a whole family of people with really long legs.
I regret this so much. All right, these are the...
Well, their offspring are all, like, limbless. Daddy, I'm sorry, I'm disappointed. Daddy, where's my harness?
I'm rolling as fast as I can.
Sir, is that your son? No, I don't know that freak.
Daddy, please unlock the door. These are the top five father songs I happen to have sitting around on my computer that I don't necessarily like or endorse in any way. Don Taylor?
Well, shuffle on your iPod just must be a joy.
Yeah.
Number five, Everclear, Father of Mine.
It was just, I know. It's just sitting on my computer.
This is a shame and this is a shale is what this is.
A shame and a fail.
Epic shale.
Yeah. All right. I guess this song would carry a lot more weight if he hadn't divorced his wife and then like left his kid behind. All right, we're done with that. I can't stand to hear any more of that.
And we may have to pay him.
Seriously, just under the 45-second mark, no royalties are due. Okay. That would have been the money that I owed you. It's not that great of a song that we have to hear that much of it, so I'm moving on. These are the top five father songs I happen to have sitting around as we head into Father's Day weekend. Don Taylor?
Number four, Madonna, Oh Father.
Okay, this is a much better song with a creepy-ass video, by the way, by David Fincher. This is that video, the black and white Fincher video, where it's got that whole sequence where she goes up to her father's casket and then it's like the mouth is stitched closed or something.
Yeah.
Somebody's asking, why do you even have that Everclear song on your computer? I don't know. I just hit search under father and it just came up. You should have seen the ones I didn't put on the list.
It came with the MP3 player.
I deleted. Alex Akas keeps sneaking into homes and putting it back in iTunes. Revert.
This, I have to say, was during my phase where I was very much into Madonna. And it has a lot to say. I mean, she isn't just like, you know, pop queen. There's a lot of songs that she's done that are very heartfelt as opposed to just, you know, very well sung.
It's a great song. I have no idea what it's really about because she said that it's not about her own father. And so, I mean, not every artist has to be singing about themselves all the time. So I don't really know. I don't know if it's about anybody in particular, but...
It's like we revile them when they're all egotistical and make everything about them, and then when they don't, we're just like, well, why not, stupid?
I remember watching this video and being really weirded out because it's full of, like, a bunch of strange, weird sort of Dutch angles. There's this sequence where, like, there's all these pearls sort of rolling across the floor at some strange angle, and then there is this sequence in the video that I think everybody remembers, especially if you ever had to do this when you were a kid, where it's like... It's either her dad or her mother, I forget who. Maybe they might not even... The shot might be tight enough that you can't actually tell, but it's where she's a little girl or whoever is the character in the song's a little girl, and is at the funeral and is, like, being, like, shoved toward the casket by the rest of the family. Like, go on! Tell daddy goodbye! You know, which is a thing that my parents always did.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you're like, another dead relative, really? And they're like, get up there and pay your respects! Boom! And, like,
actually,
kicking me up.
I think it's her mother's coffin.
Yeah, and then there's that long sequence of the
mouth is
being sewn
shut,
which is completely creepy.
Because I think that was in there because she actually saw that when she was a kid.
Yeah.
Because her mother died when she was really young.
I remember, like, having, like, my grandfather was dead and, like, having to do the thing of, like, going up and putting, like, it was like a Catholic, it was a saint, like a Sacred Heart medallion. Like, go up and put that in Granddad's shirt pocket. And I remember saying, why?
It's like throwing a quarter into a pond.
Well, apparently they made it sound like it was some sort of Marlon Perkins tracking device. Like, God couldn't find him afterward if he didn't have that. Like, I had to tag him like a sea bass.
Catholics are weird.
They're totally weird. They're effed. And it was like, if he doesn't have it, Jesus might not be able to find him. So, like, now it's on me.
And, like, Jesus is like some weird kind of, like, celestial gumshoe who's got to track you down after you've been, he's close now. I can smell him.
Seriously, it was like a dye pack in bank money or something. I had to put it in my grandfather's shirt, so God could find him in the afterlife.
Where's that in the Bible? Beep the boop. Lord said, make beep sure boop your bling is apparent.
So they're there with, like, Hicks's motion sensor, basically. Now he's over there.
Well, it's like having your coin for the River Styx.
Totally. I mean, you know, but they don't make you do that.
Isn't that why they used to put pennies on people's eyes so they could pay the ferryman?
Oh, that
ideally,
is true. Yeah.
And it was also to weigh the eyelids down to keep them shut.
Boing. Yeah, because otherwise they would just pop open again. That was the sound of eyes popping open in the grave. Boing.
I had an uncle who died when I was about 10, and I remember I went to the funeral, And they had this open casket funeral, and I think my mom was concerned that I would be, like, way too freaked out by it, so she wanted me to know that it was nothing to be scared of. So she made me look at him in the casket and then said, no, it's okay. Do you want to touch him?
What?
And I just was like, no. No, I really, really don't. And my mom was like, it's okay. You can't. I'm like, no, I really don't. I'm not afraid or anything. I just don't want to touch the dead guy.
I remember just, like, when I having to put the thing in my grandfather's pocket, and then it's like, you're doing it in a way that, like, I don't want to try to touch the dead guy, but then it's like, you know, there's just no way to do it, because we're all class in my family. He was buried, like, in a golf shirt with a pocket on it. Yeah. No ties or suits for my family. We're not going to gussy up just for God.
Because we couldn't find the Show Me Your Tits t-shirt.
Yeah.
It was in the laundry.
And so we're just, you know, so I'm like sliding.
I was stupid. That would be the.
Frankie says relax in the afterlife for eternity.
All right, these are the top five father songs that happen to be just, you know, like sitting around like crap, you know, today.
Number three is Elton John, My Father's Gun.
This is actually a pretty great song. This is from, this isn't from Captain Fantastic. This is from Tumbleweed Connection, I think, is maybe the album that that had this. This is actually not a bad song at all. This is a... And this is back when Elton John was doing that, you know, where he would have these like 7 and 8 minute sort of epics on his records. When did this even come out? Was this before? This must have been before like Yellow Brick Road and.
Maybe.
It has like a timeless quality to it though, because it's something you'd be like from any time.
It's a great song. It really is.
From this day on.
Oh yeah, that's early young Elton John. Gun.
We dug a shallow grave beneath the sun. I laid his broken body down below the southern land. It wouldn't do to bury him where any Yankee stands. I take my horse and I ride the northern plain to where the color of the grays and join the fight again. Oh, and I rest until I know the cause is for. From this day on, until I die, I wear my father's gun.
God, what a great song. I should have made this number one.
It was used on the soundtrack for Elizabethtown.
Well, that goes without saying. You figure every Elton John song will show up in a Cameron Crowe film at some point. What a great song. This is the second great Elton John song. We had I guess, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road Monday or something. Excellent. These are the top five father songs that just happen to be sitting around in my computer. By the way, that I totally get forgiven for the Everclear for just having that handy.
Yeah.
All right, these are the top five father songs I happen to have nearby, within clutch reach.
Number two is David Allan Coe, Single Father.
Now, I've picked the David Allan Coe version here, even though I think that the original artist to release this, even though it is written by David Allan Coe, I think that the first released version of this song was by Kid Rock.
I've been spending lots of time with my kid, telling him stories about the things that we did. When we were a family, such a long time ago.
It's a great song, and there aren't a lot of songs about single dads.
I've answered his questions till I'm blue in the face. There's so many things that time can erase, so I just tell him the truth. 'Cause he's not too young to know. Single father. Part-time mother. When I'm not then I'm the other you used to be. My full-time lover, now I'm a single father and a part-time mother.
It's a great song.
Lately I've been spending lots of time with my boy. There's no doubt about it, he's my pride and joy. But someday he'll grow up and I won't have him no more. There were so many things I found hard to explain, so I just took him to McDonald's or I bought him a little train. And we put it together on our living room floor. Such is the life of a single father. He says, tell me, Daddy, if it's not too much bother, why it's just you and me living here in this home.
I think he wrote this, I mean, just a few years ago. I think this is a late career composition for him. But he wrote it, and I think it was on the self-titled Kid Rock album from maybe 7 or 8 years ago. He's one of those guys that doesn't really get his own hit, so he just cranks things out for other people. These are the top five father-themed songs that I just happen to have sitting around here as we head into the weekend. I realize now that number one is so wholly inappropriate because in no way is it about actual fathers, but what are you going to do?
No, this is just wrong, wrong, wrong.
No, but it's, but you know, but come on, what a great song.
Number one, George Michael, Father Figure.
Yeah. Everybody put on your little leather caps.
And your little leather shorts.
Yeah. But
get on your bikes and ride.
God, what a great song, though. I remember hearing this. I think I was young enough when this came out that I didn't quite get what it was. All I knew was that the nuns would not allow us to listen to this. The Faith record was one of those albums that we were not allowed to have. If they saw it at school, they would take it away from you. Not unlike any Madonna record. You were not allowed to have those or any sort of heavy metal record, anything that looked like it was, you know, too rock and roll.
Were you allowed to dance?
No. Well, I mean, as long as you left enough room for the Holy Spirit between But I remember.
And by Holy Spirit, you mean penis?
Yes, yes, I do.
Holy penis.
But I remember this record that because this was the one that had "I Want Your Sex" on it.
Yeah.
It was like right at the height of the PMRC and Tipper Gore's whole kind of crusade against, you know, smutty rock and roll lyrics. And this is one of those records that if they saw it, they would just, you know, it was like immediate like suspension for having a copy of this. And I remember this nun, who I've talked about several times in the show over the years, who did seem to exhibit a rather keen and far-reaching interest into the sexual behavior of her male students. At one point, asking one of the male students to stand up and describe in vivid detail in class exactly what a wet dream was and what the sensations were that accompanied that, which is a thing.
What?
Which I swear to God, and I've talked about her before. I used to use her name, but I realized that it'd probably get me into trouble at some point.
Because ow.
And I'll say that she never did anything like untoward physically that I know of, and never to me at least. She never, you know, like did any touching or any groping. But she at one point, I swear to you, and the reason that this has to do with Father Figure is because she was at one point telling us that we weren't allowed to have the George Michael album at school because she said, Father Figure? I mean, do you even really know what that means? I bet you don't. And we were all like, I don't know what it means. Tell us.
But of course, all that does is be like, well, what does it mean? Let's go find out.
And so she sort of arched an eyebrow and was telling us like, you know, Father Figure doesn't mean what you think it means, children. But this is the same nun who, yes, would have male students stand up and talk about wet dreams. And then I swear to you, during the early days of sort of when the AIDS crisis was entering mainstream awareness, which would have been like, I don't know, like 85, 86, when sort of, you know, like Johnny and Mrs. Whitebread were becoming aware of AIDS. She was talking about, you know, AIDS and you know, how it was the result of, you know, impure sexual behavior and so forth. And she actually said at one point, and in retrospect, I guess it's maybe not so surprising that they had this conversation with, but she was describing the ways in which AIDS could be transmitted as in our science/health class. And they were, at that point, they were still talking about a lot of the media as though it were, you know, anal sex were the way in which that would be spread. And she said that wasn't really anything that we probably needed to worry about because, and keep in mind, I mean, like in sixth grade when she's saying this, she's all, you know, you don't really have to worry about that because vaginal sex is just so much more satisfying. And A, I'm in sixth grade. B, she's a nun. C, like, what the hell? D, yeah.
This is just my own
so
morbid,
creepy.
Based on my own Catholic upbringing, what was she? Was she a looker at least?
As nuns go,
yeah.
I mean, she wasn't old. That was the one thing you could say about her in terms of the looks. But she was one of the nuns, one of the rare nuns that was not elderly.
Yeah.
I mean, she was. You know, they always seem so much older when you're a kid. But I, in retrospect, I would say she was probably in her mid to late 30s.
Yeah, because all the nuns at St. Anthony of Padua Elementary School in Lancaster, PA, looked like the extras from the most recent Resident Evil movies.
Totally, like, yeah. They were all wrinkly and horrible. No, she was actually relatively young. I would say that she was no older than 40.
Wow.
But yeah, so she seemed to have a big thing for having male students stand up and engage in dialogue with her in class about sexual activities, like to a really inappropriately detailed degree. But so she was the first one who's like, father figure. That's about something else. And then she kind of arched an eyebrow and made it seem all sexy, which indeed it is. This song is, this whole album actually, especially for the time, which is 25 years ago, is really very racy.
Yeah.
I mean, not just this, but I mean, I Want Your Sex is the same way.
This album too kind of like relaunched his career a little bit, I think.
Well, this was his first post-Wham album.
Because really?
Wham broke up. They did Music from the Edge of Heaven. That was their final single in Wham. What?
And it was actually considered, people were quite surprised by the raciness of this album.
Yeah.
Because Wham was just such a...
Squeaky clean
white bread pop duo.
Choose life. Just wear neon clothes and dance around.
No, Wham was very bubbly and very frothy and very heavy. There was no...
let's not use frothy. Please. I have a
bubbling
Wham.
Fountain of musical delights.
When I was in a talent show in elementary school, at St. Anthony's, as a matter of fact, and I sang a Wham song from one of their albums. I think it was from the Bad Boys album. But no, that whole experience was just, I was supposed to sing it like as a nerd. Like my sister promised she was gonna make me this costume with the broken glasses and the whole outfit, and she bailed on me. So I still had to perform at the talent show as the nerd. Singing this song.
Wow.
And just in regular clothes. So people were just kind of left like, what? What?
This song?
No, not this. Not this
I was going to say, what do you mean you and your sister were performing this?
No. I was singing. Okay. She was supposed to do the costume, and it was a different song. It was off of a different album.
Okay.
It was a Wham album.
All right.
But just, that's why I laughed.
Odd.
Yeah.
Okay. That would just, yeah, that wouldn't be. Okay. Well, on that creepy note, we'll... I think this is one of those things, though, with George Michael, because at that point, he was still very much in the closet.
Yeah.
He didn't come out until 1996.
Yeah, and he was fooling everyone.
Well, you know, we've talked about this before, that growing up, certainly in a small town, it never occurred to anybody.
Yeah.
It never occurred to anybody that Freddie Mercury was gay until he cut his hair and took off his nail polish, and then he was suspect.
Yeah.
That was the weird thing. As long as he was dressing like...
When he grew that mustache...
Yeah, when he had long hair and was wearing like a big flowy like frock and had like glittery nipples,
singlet.
We're like, he's completely straight.
Yeah.
But then as soon as he like cut his hair and had a mustache, we're like, gay. But Rob Halford never occurred to us. George Michael never occurred to us.
Power Slave, that's about like him and a chick.
I think this is one of those things though, where it's like the balloon gets compressed one place, it comes out somewhere else. I think that's like if you're not allowed to be overtly gay, that it just that manages to ooze out through every crevice of your lyrical compositions. Now I'm just saying things to see if I can make you giggle. All right. Find out more about Big Jim Willig at bigjimwillig.com.
Let me tag on that one real quick.
Join us next week when our guests will include Mr. Ryan White, who returns from his 3-month tour of Europe, Scandinavia, and the subcontinent on Monday. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of the day's Legion of News, followed by an encore of the day's very fun Rick Emerson radio program. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Hagler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening. It is Friday, June 17th, 2011, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. Have a good weekend. Be safe. See you all Monday. Bye now. Oh, by the way, before I end this, I should say that as special request by Rick, who says, love the recent renaissance of the Ace Frehley solo album on the show. Is there any chance you could play Ace Frehley's Rip It Out during the musical interlude? Have a great weekend. Yes, that will happen in mere moments. Sir, there is every chance that will happen. Yes? You were pointing at a thing.
Well, the June 19th.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget, this coming Sunday, we had Mr. Aaron Cronin on the show yesterday. The release for Cognition, The Robot Uprise, is going to be happening this coming Sunday, Bridge City Comics, with an after party to follow at Mississippi Studios. Find out more at robotuprise.com. Eat snackies, Morse. See you Monday. Bye now.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.